ప్రవీణ భక్తివేదాంత గోస్వామి హరిశీల ప్రభుపాదికి జయం తెలిలా ప్రవిష్ట విష్ణుపాద పరమహంస పరివ్రాజకాచార్య అష్టోత్తర శతశ్రీ శ్రీమాన్ భక్తి సిద్ధాంత సరస్వతి మహారాశీల ప్రభుపాదికి ఆనందగోడి వైష్ణవ బృందకి నామాచార్య శ్రీ హరిదాస్ ఠాకూర్కి ప్రేమ సహో శ్రీకృష్ణ చైతన్య ప్రభు నిత్యానంద శ్రీ అద్వైత గదాధార శ్రీవాసాది గౌర భక్త బృందకి శ్రీ శ్రీ రాధాకృష్ణ గోప గోవినాథ శ్యామకుండ రాధాకుండ గిరి గోవర్ధానకి బృందావన ధామికి మాయపూర్ ధామికి మధురపురి ధామికి జగన్నాథ్పురి ధామికి ద్వారకాపురి ధామికి గంగమాయికి యమునమాయికి తులసిదేవికి భక్తిదేవికి సామవేద భక్త బృందకి గౌర్ ప్రేమానంది ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు ది అసెంబ్ల్ డివోటీస్ ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు ది అసెంబ్ల్ డివోటీస్ ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు ది అసెంబ్ల్ డివోటీస్ ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు శ్రీ శ్రీ గురు అండ్ శ్రీ గౌరంగ ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు శీల ప్రభుపాద్ నమోమిష్ణుపదాయ కృష్ణప్రస్థాయ భూదలేశమిది భక్తివేదాంత స్వామిని దినామిని నమస్తే సరస్వతీదేవీ గౌరవాణి ప్రచారిణే నిర్విశేష శూన్యవాది పాశ్చాత్యదేశధారిణి ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ సంసార సాగరే మగ్నం దీనం మాం కరుణానిధే కర్మగ్రాహ గ్రహీతాంగం మాముద్ధరమవార్ణవాన్ శ్రీమద్భాగవదాఖ్యోయం ప్రత్యక్ష కృష్ణమేవ హి స్వీకృతోసి మయా నాథ ముక్త్యర్థం భవ సాగరే మనోరథే మదీయోయం సఫలా సర్వదా త్వయా నిర్విఘ్నేనైవ కర్తవ్యం దాసోహం తవ కేశవ భవే భవే యథా భక్తి పాదయోర్స్తవ జాయతే తథా కురుష్వ దేవేశ నాథస్త్వన్నో యత ప్రభో నామ సంకీర్తనం యస్య సర్వపాప ప్రణాశనం ప్రణామో దుఃఖశమనం తం నమామి హరిం పరం జన్మాద్యస్య యదోన్వయాదితరదశ్చార్తేష్వభిజ్ఞస్వరాణ్ తేనే బ్రహ్మహృదాయ ఆదికవయే ముహ్యంతి యత్ సూరయ తేజోపారిమృతం యథా వినిమయో యత్ర త్రిసర్గో మృష ధామ్నా స్వేన సదా నిరస్తకుహగం సత్యం పరం ధీమహి ధర్మ ప్రోజ్జిత కైదవోత్ర పరమో నిర్మత్సరాణం సదా వేద్యం వాస్తవమత్ర వస్తు శివదం తాపత్రయోన్మూలనం శ్రీమద్భాగవతే మహాముని కృదే కిం వా పరైరీశ్వర సద్యో హృద్యవరుద్యదేత్ర కృతి శుశ్రూషుభీ తక్షణాన్ నిగమకల్పదరోర్గలితం ఫలం శుగముఖాద్ అమృతద్రవ సంయుధం పిబద భాగవతం రసమాలయం ముహురహోరసికా భువి భావుకాః సచిదానందరూపాయ విశ్వోత్పత్త్యాదిహేతవే తాపత్రయ వినాశాయ శ్రీకృష్ణాయ వయం నమః ఇయం ప్రవ్రజంతం అనుభేదమవేదకృత్యం ద్వైవాయ నో మిరహకాదరమాజ్జుహావ పుత్రేది తన్మయదయత్తరవోభినేదు తం సర్వభూతహృదయం మునిమానతోస్మి యస్వానుభావమఖిల శ్రుతిసారమేకం అధ్యాల్పదీపమదితితీర్షదాం తమోంధం సంసారిణాం కరుణయాః పురాణగుహ్యం తం వ్యాససూనుముపయామి గురుం మునీనాం నారాయణం నమస్కృత్య నరం చైవ నరోత్తమం దేవీం సరస్వతీం వ్యాసం తదో జయముదీరయే కమనీయ కిశోరముగ్ధమూర్తే కలవేణూకొనిదాదృదానందో మమ వాచి విజృంభదాం మురారేర్మధురీం నా కణికాపి కాపి కావి నమా ఓం విష్ణుపదాయ కృష్ణప్రస్థాయ భూదలే శ్రీమతి భక్తివేదాంత స్వామిని నామిని నమస్తే సరస్వతీదేవీ గౌరవాణి ప్రచారిణే నిర్విశేష శూన్యవాది పాశ్చాత్యాదేశధారిణీ శ్రీమల్ గురుచరణారవిందాభ్యాం నమః వందే నందవ్రజస్త్రీణాం పాదరేణుమభీష్టశ యాసాం హరిగదోద్గీతం పునాదీ భువనత్రయం గోపీచరణారవింద పరమాణవే నమః పీతాంబరం కరవిరాజితచక్రశంఖం కౌమోదకీ సరసిజం కరుణాసముద్రం రాధాసహాయమతిసుందరమందహాసం വാതാലയശമനിഷം ഹൃദി ഭാവയാമി കോമളം കൂജയൻ വേണം ശ്യാമളോയം കുമാരക വേദവേദ്യപരം ബ്രഹ്മ ഭാസതാം പുരതോ മമ മൂകം കരോതി വാചാലം പങ്കും ലംഘയതേ ഗിരിം യൽ കൃപാതമഹം വന്ദേ പരമാനന്ദമാധവം ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണായ നമ ശ്രീമതി രാധികായേ നമ സർവത്ര ഗോവിന്ദനാമ സങ്കീർത്തനം ഗോവിന്ദ ഗോവിന്ദ ഓം പാർത്ഥായ പ്രതിബോധിതാം ഭഗവതാം നാരായണേന സ്വയം വ്യാസേന ഗ്രഥിതാം പുരാണമുനിനാം മധ്യേ മഹാഭാരതം അദ്വൈതാമൃതവർഷിണീം ഭഗവതീം അഷ്ടാദശാധ്യായിനീം അംബത്വാമനുസന്ധദാമി ഭഗവത്ഗീതേ ഭവദ്വേഷിണീം നമോസ്തു ദേ വ്യാസ വിശാല ബുദ്ധേ പുല്ലാരവിന്ദായത പത്രനേത്രാം യേന ത്വയാ ഭാരത തൈലപൂർണ പ്രജ്വാലിതോ ജ്ഞാനമയ പ്രദീപാം പ്രപന്നപാരിജാതായ തോത്രവേത്രൈകബാണയേ ജ്ഞാനമുദ്രായ കൃഷ്ണായ ഗീതാമൃതദുഹേ നമാം സർവോപനിഷദോ ഗാവോ ദുഗ്ധാ ഗോപാലനന്ദന പാർത്ഥോ വത്സസുധീർഭോക്താ ദുഗ്ധം ഗീതാമൃതം മഹത് വസുദേവസുതം ദേവം കംസചാണൂരമർദ്ദനം ദേവകീ പരമാനന്ദം കൃഷ്ണം വന്ദേ ജഗദ്ഗുരും ഭീഷ്മദ്രോണദണ്ഡ ജയദ്രഥജല ഗാന്ധാരനീലോൽപല ശല്യഗ്രാഹവതീ കൃപേണ മഹനി കർണേന വേലാകുലാ അശ്വത്ഥാമാ വികർണ ഘോരമകരാ ദുര്യോധനാവർത്തിനി സുതീർണ ഖലു പാണ്ഡവൈരണനദീ കൈവർത്തകേശവ പാരാശര്യവജസ്സരോജമലം ഗീതാർത്ഥഗന്ധോൽക്കടം നാനാഖ്യാനകേസരം ഹരികഥാ സംബോധനാബോധിതം ലോകൈ സജ്ജനഷൽപദൈരഹരഹപ്പേബീയമാനം മുദാ ഭൂയാദ് ഭാരതമംഗജ കലിമല പ്രധ്വംസിന ശ്രേയസേ മൂകം കരോതി വാചാലം പങ്കും ലംഘയതേ ഗിരിം യൽകൃപാതമഹം വന്ദേ പരമാനന്ദമാധവം യം ബ്രഹ്മാ വരുണേന്ദ്ര രുദ്രമരുദസ്ത്വന്വന്തി ദിവ്യൈ സ്തവൈർ വേദൈർ സാംഗവദൈർ ക്രമോപനിഷദൈർ ഗായന്തി യം സമഗാഃ ധ്യാനാവസ്ഥിത തദ്ഗതേന മനസാ പശ്യന്തി യം യോഗിനോ യസ്യാന്തം ന വിദുസുരാ അസുരഗണൈ ദേവായ തസ്മൈ നമഃ So, yesterday when we discussed this verse, Amanitvam Adambitvam, two words, isn't it? Amanitvam Adambitvam Ahimsa Chandi Arjavam Acharyopasanam Shaujam Sthairyam Atmavinigraha. Krishna says the qualities necessary to cultivate the knowledge, Jnana Sadhana as they are called, and those qualities which will release us from the grip of the body. That is the goal behind it. How to become this, the grip, to loosen that grip of the body on us. Body is having a strong grip on us, isn't it? It's got a very strong grip. To make that grip a little bit easier, to loosen it, Krishna is saying these jnana sadhanas will help. That is why these qualities were spoken here. So among them, the first one Krishna spoke about Amanitvam, isn't it, which we discussed yesterday, what Amanitvam means. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu mentions in the Shikshashtakam also, Amanina Manadena, that Amanitvam, that is Amanitvam. And then in the Sahasranam also, it says, Amani Manado Manya Logaswami Tralogadrak. So everywhere Amanitvam is spoken. Then we also saw what is Adambitvam means, pridelessness, is the translation here. So adambitvam, amanitvam, adambitvam. And in Krishna, we have also talked about that how this amanitvam, adambitvam helps us to understand or free ourselves from this assumed personality, what we have at the moment. We have an assumed personality, all of us. We identify with that. To free from that and come to our real jivatvam in that. In the sense that assumed personality means it includes everything, all other identities what we have taken on us. So Krishna is saying here that the first thing is that we have to make this decision that I want to realize the truth, not to ponder around my own false identity whole lifetime and waste the life in that way. So Krishna says, so before the distress comes, final problem of leaving this body comes, we should know how to free ourselves from this, what they call this bondage situation. That before it happens, before death happens, we should know how to free ourselves from that. And this perfection has to happen in this life, and we alone have to do good for us. Nobody else is going to come and do it for us. We alone have to do it for us. If that commitment has happened in a person, or one has definitely decided for himself that he wants to know the truth, he wants to free himself from this bodily existence, and if that intense desire is inside, then he will find his way in this world. The way will be open to him at some point in time. And we ourselves can treat these diseases, which one? This amanittum and adambittum. We can treat those diseases ourselves, because more important than anything else is this, that I myself should know that what do I want in this life at the end. And Krishna is saying here that I want to do the best for me, in other words, to free myself from this situation. And if I have that intense desire, in a natural way, if I'm conscious of that, this manam and dambham will go from inside. It's just being aware of that all the time. In that case, if I'm fixed in that I do not want this material existence anymore, I want to escape from this body once for all, if that is very intensely burning inside, then this manam dambham, without any treatment, it will go. But it has to be so strong, that desire inside, accordingly. Because once that desire comes, material world is not important anymore. So naturally, this manam dambham also leaves you at that point. Nothing is to be done. They give the example in the Upanishads that what they say is that a person, if his head is caught on fire, what will he do? He runs for the water, wherever it's available, isn't it? So intense has to be the desire inside that I want to escape from this bodily life once for all. If that has happened, they give the example as though someone was caught fire on his head. How he would be running for the water to extinguish the fire in the head. In a similar way, Krishna is saying that if one has that strong desire inside to escape from this material existence, naturally, abhimanam or manam or dambham, all these things will immediately leave him. He won't have it. It's only due to lack of this one thing, which Krishna calls in the Bhagavad Gita as vyavasayalpiya buddhi. Because it's not there, the mumukshatvam, intense desire to exit from here, because it's not there, Krishna says this abhimanam, manam, dambham happens to a person. So mumukshatvam, or in other words, that mumukshatvam is the main thing. Mumukshatvam will get rid of many of these bad qualities in us. Mumukshatvam. Mumukshatvam's power is like that. That's why Durlabham Trayamevaidal, Vivek Chudamani says like this, Durlabham Trayamevaidal, Devanugraha Kadaram, Manushyatvam, Mumukshatvam, Mahapurusha Samshayam. These three things, Ajari Swamiji says in the Vivek Chudamani, that these three things, if one has it in life, then he will escape. What are they? First thing, that he has got a human body. That's the first qualification, to get a human body. Secondly, an intense means very powerful desire inside to not to come back again here and to accept another material body. Freedom from this body, freedom from the mind and the intelligence, freedom from material existence, in other words. So, manushyatvam, mumukshatvam. And along with that, if he gets the opportunity with Mahapurusha Samshraya, association with a Mahatma, a realized soul, if he has all these three things, then he doesn't require anything else. He will automatically escape from here without too much of a problem. So manam and dhambam, this abhimanam, Krishna said yesterday that these two things, which one, the amanitam, adambitvam, or manam and dhambam, if those two have gone from a person, then to a large extent he'll be released from the body also. That is the way it is. Manam and dhambam, they keep your bodily identity very, very strong. So if this manam dhambam goes away, or amanitvam adambitvam comes to a person, to a large extent he will get released from the body. We do not know how these two things are holding the body very strongly. Abhimanam and dhambam. Abhimanam and dhambam. So, after saying that, Krishna talks about the next one. Ahimsa. Isn't it? Ahimsa. Now, ahimsa, generally people have one understanding. What is that? Ahimsa means people say you should not give pain to another person or kill someone. That is called himsa, isn't it? It's called himsa. Refraining from that. But if you look into the way Patanjali and others have spoken about ahimsa, in the Yoga Sutra, Patanjali says here, asuyadihi vigara abhavaha. That is what he calls as vigara abhavaha is called ahimsa. Asuyadibi vigaram abhavaha. Envy in a person, if one doesn't have that emotion inside, vigaram inside, its absence is called ahimsa, he says. There is a detailed explanation behind this. I know in the beginning when you say we are taking it as physical violence or physically destroying someone is considered as himsa. But in the Yoga Shastram, in Patanjali's Yoga Sutram also, they mentions there that himsa is like this. Himsa means that if you release any thought in a negative way towards someone inside, that itself is himsa. And in the absence of a thought, it's called ahimsa. It's called ahimsa. Suppose inside you, if even in a very subtle level, a bad thought develops against someone, anybody, doesn't matter. If a thought develops, that is himsa. To that extent, the rishis are subtle about that. They are not looking into the gross side. They are saying inside you, if any thought develops against someone, that itself is himsa. It's violence. That's what they are saying. So, because sometimes it is like that. If a thought has developed, sometimes due to envy, somebody else has done well in life or somebody else is doing better than you in something, whatever it is, in different fields, this happens, isn't it? According, competition is always there. So due to matsaryam or this competition nature, sometimes it so happens that within a person, an envy develops towards someone. That means you have released a thought which is violent towards that person, that you have released against him. So therefore it mentions like this, that it is not the gross side of it, it is that subtle side that's more important. Subtle side is more important. Sometimes you may get angry with someone and you really want to punish that person strongly. If such a thought happens inside, but you don't have the strength to do that towards that person, but inside you have cursed him for that matter. Because you couldn't do anything about it, so you just cursed him inside. And so if you do like that, so what will happen is the rishi's understanding is like, they tell us like this, that suppose a lot of people curse against something, their curse will develop in a particular form and they will manifest in this world. The explanation is people like Hitler, Mussolini, all these are the products of this. That a group of people, when they generally, if they release this thought inside against someone, or himsa, in other words, a violent thought builds up in a person, and a lot of people in a country reveals it, like in a country or in a big society, if a lot of people think like this, and these violent thoughts inside, if it's built up, it will manifest as a person in that among them, and they will destroy the world. And that is what these, that is how the demonic personalities they take birth in this world. This is their explanation to that. Sometimes you can see from nowhere someone comes up and he becomes a very dangerous person in this world, decides to destroy everything and burn everything out. So this kind of things happens. Krishna is saying that due to this problem, due to this thought waves, and there is reason to accept this. We'll come to that, why it is like that. It is difficult sometimes. We don't know our subtlety of our own mind, isn't it? The mind from which we are developing various thoughts and we are releasing these thoughts. Thoughts develops inside as chitta-vritti. And when there is a lot of chitta-vritti from so many people happening on the same person or same problem or whatever it is, they develop some thought power inside. All that thought power will combine together and a person will manifest from that thought. Just like individual subtle body develops a individual person, isn't it? Similarly, a collective subtle body also exists. And that collective subtle body will come out as one personality and you will create a lot of demonic activities in this world. This is how it happens. Individually we know from our subtle body this gross body has come. Isn't it? In a similar way, individual subtle body creates individual vasanas. But collectively in a whole human society, if they develop some kind of himsa or some kind of violent thoughts in a society, if it develops, it will manifest in the form of a person in that society. This is the Rishi's invention. Rishis are saying to us like this. That is why it is important that we do not create any hate among the in the society, against another society. These things are dangerous because they manifest sometime or the other in the form of a person and it will immediately create disturbances in the society. That is how you have to know these things. Because knowing very well everything on a gross platform is easy. But on a subtle level, what is happening? Constantly complaining about others in this world, others' activities, and developing a kind of envious nature towards them or any kind of enmity towards them can eventually develop in this way. It will develop in the form of a personality who will be born and who will create a lot of destruction in this world. That is the Rishi's conclusion about this. And it is a very interesting conclusion that as much as individually we are all responsible for that, people are, especially that is why in the news and propaganda and all that, when they create against some person, demonize them, and that collectively it becomes more propaganda and everybody starts speaking in the same way and such thoughts develop in a person, that will eventually generate another demonic personality from that. So, because in everything that's happening in this world, we also have a little share in that deposit. We also have a religion. And it is like this only all the incarnations have appeared in this world. Avatara Purushas. All incarnations comes like this way. You can see this. That even if you know that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared due to Advaita Acharya's penances. At that time, at the time when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared, the situation was very difficult in Bengal, particularly due to the Vedic society was very much in a destruction stage, and there were many people who were praying to Krishna for constantly for shelter. Particularly, and Advaita Acharya was the head among them, and Advaita Acharya's prayers and many others' prayers, it was all manifested in the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and came. This is the subtle side of that appearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Gross side we can see, he was born as son of Krishna, appeared as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as Jagannath Mishra and Shachi Devi's son. That is the gross side of it. But what is the cause behind that? The appearance of any incarnation is like that. Similarly, you will see in the Bhagavatam also, when Hiranyakashipu was torturing people, completely working against the Vedic principles, giving pain to the Brahmanas, stopping all the sacrifices and killing children and so many things he did, and the demigods and others were in a great distress. And from their thoughts, Narasimha Murthy appeared. Narasimha Murthy appeared from that. So normally what it happens is the rishis performs penances. All the rishis are performing penances. They are always performing penances. Because in order to, their way of establishing dharmam in this world is through tapas. Austerities and penances is their process, not by any other means. Through austerities and penances, they establish dharmam in this world. And it is their power of austerities that comes through the person or the incarnations who appear in this world. If you read Ramayanam, you will see there, Lord Ramchandra was going into the forest and he was continuously visiting all the rishis at that time. Do you know that? That when he went into the forest, 14 years, he was saying to Bharata and Kaikeyi that it's a good opportunity for me to visit so many great personalities. So, what was he looking for? Actually, he says here that he wondered, in that visit, all the great sages, in Ramayana very clearly says this, all the great sages deposited their power of austerities in Ramachandra. They gave it to, handed over to him. In a certain level, they were able to do that. They were able to hand over all their power of austerities to Ramachandra. Agastya Maharshi in Chitrakudam, and Bharadwaja Maharshi, Gautama Maharshi, Kannu Maharshi, there is a number of Vishwamitra, Vasishta, all of them gave the power of austerities to Ramachandra. That is that tapashakti, another power of austerities. He carried that with him, and Ramachandra carried that with him. And that's why, while the battle happened with Ravana and Ramachandra, there were different sages have contributed to that in their own way. Their tapashakti, or power of austerities, has come through Ramachandra at that time. So one level, you may say Ramachandra is Krishna's another incarnations, but the rishis knows this principle that while dealing in this world, their dharmam is maintained by their austerities and penances. Austerities and penances are important. So, in one instance, Vivekananda speaks about this, that when he went for his Chicago, for the Parliament of Religions, where he was addressing, and when he spoke, there were a great recognition from the people who were assembled there in that meeting. And when they asked him about that, he said, his answer was very interesting. What he said was, there's nothing special about me. But before I left home, he says, I went to all the holy places, all the places where the rishis are living. And I have prayed to them to give me that strength what I need. And they have deposited everything in me at the time. He is very boldly saying this. And it was that strength that has come out through me, because the rishis wanted that something has to happen. And the rishis wanted, deposited their power of austerity in him, and he says it happened in that way through me. That is all. You will see like that in many, many instances. Prabhupada also mentions, before he left India, he had travelled very widely, went to all the holy places, temples, sages where they live, great sannyasis, yogis, all of them he met before he started his journey into America. So why is that? Because he knows that they all want the right thing to happen, good things to happen. The rishis have got that good heart. And when they know that when their prayers are answered and Krishna makes arrangement to deposit their tapashakti or power of austerities to one person, and it manifests through that person. So this is normal. This is not an unusual thing. So in such situations, things which cannot be normally done through a person will happen. Like you can see through Prabhupada, things normally which cannot happen through a person at that age in life and with absolutely no help from anywhere, one person comes and does wonderful things. So you start wondering, how did this happen? And the reason behind that is this. That when, because just like bad thoughts develop in the world and it manifests in a person and it comes out in a demonic person. Similarly, there are many people who are thinking in a good direction also for the welfare of the country, welfare of the people. Their thoughts also manifest and come together and manifest in a person. And that is what has happened to in Prabhupada's case also. So these subtle things we have to take into account. We can't ignore that.
Many, many people were feeling the necessity to develop Krishna consciousness, and who wanted to present Krishna consciousness to the world. People who are suffering all over, they don't have any kind of limitations. They think in the welfare of the humanity. They don't think for the welfare of one country or the other. They are always thinking for the welfare of the whole world. Loka samasta sukhino bhavantu. So that is their thoughts. So those who are thinking like that, when their tapashakti or power of austerity is, suddenly it manifests through one person. And that is what we see through these kind of instances. When you observe that, you will notice this thing. So, what it indicates is that our weaknesses inside each one of us, weaknesses means these bad qualities, lust, anger, greed and envy and things like that, all of them, they are responsible for creating problem in this world. On an individual level it may not, but on a collective level it will cause problems. That is why the Rishi says to us that not to develop such, to purify oneself. Purification of one's own existence is important because of that. Personally, you may not be doing anything to anyone, but the very thought, if it... So therefore you can see, the word ahimsa means a lot more than simply killing a person or becoming violent towards another person. That's not the only ahimsa. Ahimsa means actually, if within inside, if any thought has developed against anyone in this world, in any form, that if a collective thought builds up like that, it can develop in the form of a demoniac person in this world. So Krishna says here that if that himsa, if it has come inside me, the most damage I am doing to myself, I do to myself. I am creating violence towards me first. And through that, I am giving a little bit of pain to others in this world. But firstly, I create pain for myself by doing that. By doing like that. If you look into the same chapter, Krishna says in the 29th verse something. Something in connection with that, he says.
Samam pasyan hi sarvatra samavastitam ishwaram Nahyen astyatmanatmanam tatoyati param gadim.
That's that verse. Krishna is saying here that samam pashyanhi sarvatra samavastidam ishwaram. That is the 29th verse.
Samam pashyanhi sarvatra samavastidam ishwaram nahyen astyatmanatmanam tatoyati param gadi. One who sees the super soul in every living being and equal everywhere does not degrade himself by his mind.
See that? What Krishna is saying? Krishna is saying that one who sees everyone equal, there is no possibility of developing any himsa towards others. But one who develops any kind of enmity or any kind of ill feeling towards other person, he first punishes himself, his own mind, before he does anything to others.
Samam pashyanhi sarvatra samavastidam ishwaram.
So samavastidam ishwaram, and such a person, that nahienas yalpana alpanam tadayadi parangadim. If he has developed some, that is why it's so important to develop this equal vision, what Krishna says, isn't it? Why it is important, equal vision? People will ask this question, why should I have to have this equal vision? What do I need that for? Is it not? The reason is this, that if a person is on an equal vision, then he does not have any violent feelings towards others. Otherwise, a lot of people we will hate, a lot of people we will love in this world. This loving-hating business will go on in this world, and that can cause problems. So you see, on an individual level, we should not develop violence towards others. That is basic thing. But on a collective level, it is very dangerous. Whenever any demonic personality appears in this world, you have to take it behind that. There is a lot of violent thoughts developed in many people's heart. It is from there that that violent personality was born. So, you can see also this kind of envy or enmity towards others or ill feeling towards others
it punishes yourself physically also. Sometimes when you have developed anger towards anyone or strong envy towards someone, when you eat in the food, it won't get digested properly because of the anger inside. So that is that himsa Krishna is talking about. Kimsa, where does this violent thought come from? Actually, these violent thoughts are a manifestation of the false ego inside. That ahangaram Krishna talked about, ahangaram's one form is this himsa or violence. Violence is another form of that ahangaram. So just like you can see here, when that ahangaram is very powerful inside, that himsa also will be very powerful. It also will be very powerful. You can, just like there's one dog standing there in the street, if another dog comes, what does it do? Barks straight away. You see, it barks towards the other one. It's just the way it is. So why have you come to my territory? That's the dog's thing like that, is it not? So in a similar way, we are also doing exactly the same thing, but done it in a much more sophisticated way, isn't it? So, and sometimes we do not exhibit ourselves, but that thoughts are always there. So that himsa vritti, that means that thoughts of himsa, when it has completely gone away from someone, then that person will not have any problems in anywhere, at any circumstances. Patanjali mentions this in the Yoga Sutra. He says, even the violent, very violent animals will behave in a very loving way. That will happen to them. It will happen to them. If you look into many of the Mahatmas' life in this world, you will see this happening. This happened in many great personalities. There was one Narayana Guru. He lived about 100 years ago, and he spent a lot of time in the forest to practice his meditation and dhyanam, yogam, everything. And he was able to remove this from inside the heart, violence towards others. The result was that when he was living in a cottage in the forest, even tigers and lions used to come and sleep in front of the cottage. They never used to feel any kind of enmity towards him or towards other living entities. Just shows the power of that mind inside, the subtle mind, how it operates. So while he was once performing penances in the mountains, in a forest, and one disciple went to see him, whom he knew in the country. He went to see him. And when he looked from long distance, he thought it's a calf, or cow or a calf lying there. But when he got closer there, he saw that it was a tiger who was lying there outside his cottage. And Narayana Guru was sitting outside, and he thought that he was sleeping because he was in the yoga samadhi state. He was sitting like that. And he was frightened to go there because the tiger was lying down, and Narayana Guru was sitting next to the tiger in a samadhi state. And that time, and as soon as he arrived there, Narayana Guru saw that his disciple has come. He opened his eyes and called him to come closer. So he was finding it very difficult. Then he told him that the tiger won't give you any trouble. Come closer, he said. So as soon as he got closer to Narayana Guru, the tiger got up and opened its eyes and again lie down and started sleeping. Why does this happen? Because in the presence of personalities like that, who have no violent thought inside, in a natural way, those who have got that violent nature, that will also get subdued. You will see this in many, many cases. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to the forest, in the Jharkhand forest, all the animals, they didn't give any trouble to him, isn't it? They didn't attack him or give any problems to him. This is very common in many, many places, many people's lives, this has happened. Why? Because there is no violence anymore inside. Only due to violence, they felt the need, the animals feel that violence. If you have violent nature inside, the animals will also react in the same way. So in these situations, he says, in the great Mahatmas, this himsa vritti means this violent thought, does not exist anymore. Therefore, those animals even who have a violent nature, even when they are in their presence, they get subdued by that. They get subdued by the power of that person's non-violent nature. That is the beauty of that. There was there are so many stories in the same way about the mind of these realized souls who are free from violence and how they control others in the same way. There was a famous sannyasi by name Brahmananda Swami. This Brahmananda, he had very famous in his time, and at once it so happened that they had some mutts in Benares. In Benares they had a mutt. And in that mutt there were some brahmacharis were staying there, and they were always arguing and quarreling each other about some silly things that was going on. And they were all in the mutt and they were studying, and at the same time there was always a lot of problems in that mutt. Brahmananda Swami finally told them that he will come and see what the problem is, he said. So one day Brahmananda Swami goes to this mutt and called all the disciples. And as soon as Swamiji came there and the disciples sat around, these envious feelings each other, what they had, inimical feelings or ill feelings towards each other, that's gone. They all felt extreme. Some of the disciples wrote about that later. Very presence of a Mahatma like that, a realized soul, has an immediate effect on the people who are around them. So they talk about that, and among these brahmacharis, a proper relationship was created by a few days' time, by his presence alone. So the reason is that the person who is there, he has no violent thought inside, then because he has no himsa or violent thoughts inside, because he is established in ahimsa, therefore in his presence those others who have got inimical each other, even they will also get freed from that dvesham or hate. They will also get released from their hate. So powerful is that person's influence on others. So powerful is the person's influence on others. There are so many stories in like this, in what has happened in many, many different people's lifetimes. So in reality, if the himsa nature has gone from a person, it has to go from inside completely. Only in that case this will happen. Mahatma Gandhi's case also, this is spoken. While he was in South Africa, it seems that some tea and coffee estates which were run there by some wealthy people, and there was one particular estate, he says in his autobiography what happened, that in one particular estate that he had, that he will not treat his workers properly, was giving them a very hard time, not paying them properly, and if anybody said anything against him, he used to be very violent towards them. He used to take the gun and shoot them and kill them like that. This was going on, and many people reported this matter to Mahatma Gandhi. And Mahatma Gandhi decided to go and visit him once. When he decided to go and visit him, at that time he came to know the wealthy plantation owner. He came to know about that Gandhiji is going to come. So he sent a message to Gandhi not to come, saying that if you come, there will be very serious consequences from that. That was the message he sent. And many of the advisors also who were with that wealthy estate owner or plantation owner advised Mahatma Gandhi not to go. And in one instance, what Mahatma Gandhi did was, one night, without saying anything to anyone, right in the middle of the night, he went to that owner of the plantation and knocked at his door. And when he came out and opened the door, he saw Gandhiji standing outside. So Gandhiji says to him, "I have come to see you. Do you want to shoot me? You can shoot me," he said. That was his words to him. "If you want to shoot me, you can shoot me. There is no problem with that." As soon as he said that, that person could not believe this. He never expected this to happen. And seeing Gandhiji's that truthfulness in him, and the words and sincerity, it was not a very empty statement, because inside there is no inimical feelings in Gandhiji's heart. A lot of people criticize Gandhiji for various other things. That's another side to it. But certain qualities in Mahatmas, you have to recognize that. And that person there, he was so moved by Gandhiji's statement. Again Gandhiji repeated the statement, "I have come here. If you want to shoot me, you can shoot me. But can I talk to you?" he said. And then he invited him inside and they had a good chat. Not only that, he took him around the estate that morning
And then he agreed with Gandhiji that he will not do this again to the workers. A guarantee was given to Mahatmaji at that time and send him home. So these experiences are there in many, many instances. This has happened. You will see like this that those who have proper understanding, they are freedom from this himsa, freedom from the violence, they have no fear. That is the way to be fearlessness. That's the way to be fearlessness. So Krishna says here that amanitvam adhambitvam ahimsa chandi arjavam. So even among the mahalma, the prayogi, I mean practically making it requires this purity inside. Making this purity inside. Acharya Swamiji's life, if you read, you will see there, same thing. Shankaracharya, while he was traveling, Kapaligas, there was a sect of people who used to kill human body and offer make it as an offering to the deity of Kali. They were doing that. So it so happened that while he was passing through, these Kapaligas were present there. And they told him that they saw this young, comely looking Brahmana coming. So they thought it's a nice offering to the Devi. And they decided to get him and kill him. Acharya Swamiji's words to him, you read this in the Shankaravijayam book. He says to them that if this body is of any use to you, I have no problem giving it to you, he said. If it is of any use to you, he said. When they heard this word, Kapaligas, there was a disciple called Padmavada who was there at that time. Padmavada had executed previously Narasimha Mandram. Narasimha Murthy he has worshipped before. And Narasimha Murthy manifested there and protected Acharya from there, from Kapaligas. That's a famous story in the Shankaravijayam book. If you read, you will see this. Spoken in all the Shankaravijayam. There's about 5 or 6 different books talking about Acharya's life at that time. And this one appears in every book. This incident with the Kapaligas. And they protected him, Narasimha Murthy protected him from the Kapaligas at that time. So these three things, amanitvam, adambitvam, now ahimsa. Oh, ahimsa. Another interesting thing about this is that Gandhiji met Paramacharya Chandrasekhara Saraswati in a village called Nellisheri while Gandhiji was traveling before independence. Gandhiji had a breakfast with him in one small village in somebody's house. It was between Paramacharya and Gandhiji had the meeting. And nobody knew what was discussed between them, because Chandrasekhara Saraswati was a very towering personality, spiritually very advanced, and the Acharya of the Kanchi Kamagodi Pidam at that time. And Gandhiji was the head of the Congress Party who was fighting for the independence. Much later, nobody knew what was discussed between them. Later on, one press reporter asked Gandhiji, what did you discuss with Chandrasekhara Saraswati in the village when you were together for the breakfast? So Gandhiji says at that time that I told Chandrasekhara Saraswati, that was the time there was a lot of threat to Gandhiji's life also. People wanted to, many opposite parties wanted to shoot him. Politics is always a risky thing, isn't it? So he had the fear that he was going to be shot one day. It was going to happen. And he said that, quoting this example of Abraham Lincoln was shot also in the same way, had to leave the body. Will the same thing happen to me? And Gandhiji says to Paramacharya that if a situation happens like that, and if I get shot, Gandhiji said to him, I do not want to create any kind of ill feeling towards that person who has shot me. No thought should develop inside, is there any way for that? This is what he asked Chandrasekhara Saraswati. His question to Paramacharya was this, that if I get shot during this, they are so courageous, isn't it? Because they are not frightened about anything. They don't have fear in them. So nowadays all of them have got so fearful. They wear their waterproof jacket and wander around everywhere with big, big security arrangements. But they were not like that. This is that spiritual strength in the person. He was fearless. And he was willing to go with anything. And he said that if any situation happens like that, Gandhiji's question to Chandrasekhara Saraswati was that I do not want any kind of hate or ill feeling.
himsa thought should develop in my heart. Is there any way this can happen? Is any way for that? Any possibility for that? He wanted to know from Shastram what they suggest. Chandrasekhara Saraswati told him that seeing your good heart, he said, I can guarantee that won't happen, he said. That won't happen in your heart. That you will not develop any enmity towards that person. So careful they were about themselves. More than about others, they were careful about themselves. Not to develop any kind of violence or violent nature towards others, even to those who have become inimical towards you. And exactly the same way it happened also when Gandhiji was shot in 1948, on 30th of January. When he was shot, he didn't say one word about it, chanted the Ramchandra's name and left this world. And which is an indication that he had no inimical thoughts at that time, rather much in a God-conscious way he was able to exit from here. So that is what is this ahimsa is all about. Ahimsa is not physical violence only. Ahimsa is inside us. If there is any violent thoughts developing, we have to be careful about that. Violent thought means even not physical violence, but even on a mental level. If a hate or dvesham or any kind of ill feelings towards others, one has to take care of that. Otherwise, collectively, it will kill us first and it will create problems for others also. So that is that ahimsa. That's all we have to understand about ahimsa. That is more important than the violent. We talk about ahimsa in terms of killing animals and killing. This is all a secondary aspect of that. The primary aspect is we are ourselves very violent inside. It's from there all other manifestations happens. Like killing animals, slaughtering animals. These are all secondary things. But primarily inside us we have that violent thoughts, nature in us. And because we do not understand the subtlety of the way the society functions, we turn eventually into this kind of activity. So, Krishna mentions this, Amanitvam Adambitvam Ahimsa. Ahimanitvam Adambitvam Ahimsa. So, Himsavrati as it is called here. So you can see here, nowadays there's always this talk about whether we should have weapons for defense, isn't it? In America it's a big subject of talking all the time, whether they should have guns or not, all these things. The way the rishis saw this was in a completely different way. That those who are fearful, they become violent. They become violent. Only those who are fearful, they become violent. So before the people who carry these weapons or who needs these weapons for their protection, they are those people who, before you start punishing me, I want to kill you. This is their understanding, isn't it? That's why they carry these weapons inside. In other words, one who is frightened, he is the one who creates violence. One who is frightened, he creates the violence. So practically, Rishi's point of view is, one who is carrying weapons, he is in a fearful state. That's an indication of that. He is frightened. That's why he is carrying weapons, isn't it? When he is frightened, he carries the weapons with him. Otherwise, what is the need for weapons? And because if somebody attacks me, I want to give it back to him. Therefore, I carry the weapons with me, isn't it? So, but those who have no himsa, this himsa bhavam or himsa vritti inside, they do not carry any weapons with them, because in their inside that they have gone beyond this body, that they can think independent of this. Punishing them on the body through weapons and all is like in the animalistic stage. It's not even in the human stage. Human level, that is not even necessary. According to Mahalpas, realized souls, they are saying they have transcended the body, and therefore they do not feel any fear. Because they have transcended the body, they don't feel the fear at all from anyone, for that matter. What to talk about an enemy, even from the wild animals. You will see in several cases, Ramana Maharshi's case, it used to be common. All kinds of animals used to come and sleep with him. Tigers and leopards and very, very venomous snakes also used to come to the room and lie there. He never felt uneasy about it. So how did this happen? Because that violent nature has gone from inside. We have always this fear, and that fear manifests in the form of violence from us. And that is what Krishna is saying here. So Krishna's word of ahimsa is referring to a much more subtle level, not to see things purely on a gross level. Generally when we say ahimsa generally refers to as non-violence, isn't it? That's how it is translated also here. That generally we'll say non-violence. Non-violence generally taken to mean not killing or destroying the body. But Prabhupada mentions here, actually non-violence means not to put others into distress. People in general are trapped by ignorance in the material concept of life, and they perpetually suffer material pains. So unless one elevates people to spiritual knowledge, one is practicing violence. So long as one is not engaged in spiritual activity, he is violent, no matter who it is. He is violent. Because continuously, if you are releasing violent thoughts from inside, that means you are creating violence in the society. And collectively, it manifests in the form of a person, in the society, in the form of war, in the form of all kinds of calamities, that what happens from there. So that is what ahimsa means. Amanitvam, adambitvam, ahimsa. Three things. Then the next one Krishna is talking about is chandi. Chandi, isn't it? Ahimsa, chandi, arjavam. Chandi means tolerance. Tolerance, isn't it? This tolerance is a very interesting topic, because what is the limit of tolerance? People ask that question. How tolerant we should be? That question is always there. The answer to that is, tolerance is concerned that chandi, as far as body is concerned, there will always be problems. First thing, we have to accept that. There will always be problems with this body. There is no way to escape from that. And tolerance is the best solution to the problem. Krishna is saying like that. That is why when Krishna started speaking Bhagavad Gita, one of the verses first he started was Matrasparshyastu Kaunteya Shitoshna Sukadukkada Agamabhayano Nityam Tam Titikshastu Bharata. Very beginning of the second chapter itself, very early chapter, beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna said that, isn't it? Very beginning itself, to say that, to indicate to us, without this quality, if you want to progress in spiritual life, it is not possible. If you have not learned to tolerate the miseries of this world, it is not possible to go further. This is the principle. So, miseries will come from all sides, from material life, from body, it will come, adhyatmiyam, adhibodhiyam, adhidevigam, all kinds of distress will come from different sides. When they come, if one can tolerate, Krishna says, there is some hope. But normal tendency is to fight against everything, isn't it? So Krishna is saying, matrasparshastu kaundeya shidoshna sukadukkada, shidam ushnam, sukham dukham, they will always be there in this world. Spiritual progress is possible when you transcend them, when you go beyond them. And if you, any, doesn't matter who it is, know how great the personality is, distress will come. And particularly, if there is no other distress in this world, at least distress in relationship with the body will come. Finally, it will come. All of them, you can see that. That because the reason for that is, body is similar to everyone's body, is very much the same. Material elements and combination of material elements, is it not? And that is not going to change. Ramana Maharshi had cancer and what they call sarcoma that has developed. And many people used to say it was very painful to the body, very painful to the body. He was having severe pain in the body. All kinds of difficulties were there. He tolerated that. People came to treat him, but he was not interested. He used to ask them the question, who is having the pain? Ask the question. He said, so that was his nature. To inquire, even at that time, he put forward this. You have to ask the question, who is having the pain? So, Mahalpas, when they get distressed, they know that is the right time for self-inquiry. Self-inquiry is not with intelligence. Self-inquiry is done in the right consciousness. And especially when you experience distress, the way they escape from that distress is by engaging in self-inquiry. When you have tremendous distress in the body, that is the time to ask who is having the distress. And you know very well the answer is also there in the Shastram. As soon as you go into the deep sleep, there is no distress. Is it not? So who is experiencing it? The body is experiencing the distress, and I am not this body. So once the answer is given like that, okay, body, you are experiencing distress. There is nobody is denying that. They have all experienced distress. Prabhupada had a lot of distress before he left this body. Before he left his body for months and months together, he was being carried around by the devotees. And body, he could take any more food, drink water. He was in a particularly difficult situation. But still, he continued with his mission. Because why? He knows that the body will show its colors, when its true color, when it comes. When it has to go, it will do all these things, all this drama it will play, and then it will go. So to that extent, they were separated from the body. That is the proof of that. We are thinking that they are suffering due to that, but that is because in our eyes what we see, the way the body has shrunk and the body's capacity to do things have gone away and it looks like a vegetable lying there. People get the impression that he must be suffering heavily. But the personalities like Srila Prabhupada and others, at that time they are utilizing it for their own realization of the self. Because once you are convinced that this is what the body is going to offer you at the end, you will not show any more attachment to the body. So even if the slightest attachment was there, even that will go at that point in time, when the body gives you a lot of trouble. This is how they utilize even, that is why in the Bhagavatam it says, isn't it, that the Tathraya Maharshi finally says, body is my spiritual master. Why? This is what the body has taught me, that I shouldn't get attached to the body. So constantly reflecting on this, he me deha moham, that deha moham causes this problem. Teja pavana pura adishayal prema heto dehe vite kalatra adishaja vivashadam tulpadam vismarandi soyam manyeshunova paramiha varado sambradam chakshikarnam tukjihuagre vigarshandi avashamadaida kopina tulpadabje. This is from Narayaniyam, this verse. Manpatur says to Krishna, he me deha moham. This deha moham, attachment to this body, has to go. If you can't do anything to me, he says to Krishna, at least take away this deha moham. If you can't fix this body, you can't do anything with this body, please rid me of this attachment to this body. That is how the great devotees have prayed to Krishna. Durvaro dehamoham yadi tadradhuna tarhi nishesha rogal. Even if it is difficult to completely take away, because he was very very sick with different problems in the body, so everyone finally come to this conclusion. They don't ask Krishna anymore to cure the illness. They say to him that please break away this attachment I have with this body. That one you can do, that you are capable of doing, are you not? They say to Krishna like that. Because that is the proper solution to the problem, not to cure the illness of the body. That is not going to be, if you cure today, tomorrow it's going to come back again. That's the nature of the body. So, chandi means, Krishna is saying here, amanitvam adambitvam ahimsa chandi. Chandi means this capacity to know the proper way understanding the body, and able to tolerate. Only if you understand the body properly, you'll tolerate the illnesses, isn't it? So he says here, then nobody can escape from that. Whether it is great devotees or great jnanis or great yogis or great bhaktas, they all have to accept this fact. Why? Body is in the prakriti. Prakriti's product, that is, she will decide what the body should have and should not have. Prakriti's decision, you can't make that. No matter who it is, even if you are a jnani or a yogi or a bhakta, whatever it is, no matter who advanced yourself, realized you are, as far as body is concerned, that's not yours.
This is why we say, I am not this body, body is not mine. Why we say this? These three things, I am not this body, body is not mine, body is not for my enjoyment. If you keep on repeating this all the time, you won't get attached to the body too much. And if you don't get attached to the body, there's a chance that you may escape from the miseries. So this is the reason, because body is not mine, it is Prakriti's body. Prakriti has put it on, Prakriti will take it back. And what should happen to this body is under the control of Prakriti, material nature. Material nature makes the decision how this body should live, how long it should live, in what condition it should be, what diseases should come, what diseases should go, and how we should exit from here. All these are decided by Prakriti. Material nature will make that decision in conjunction with our karma, prarabdham. So there you have no control over it. So it's better to recognize that first, that we have no control over the destiny on this body is concerned, and come to terms with it within ourselves. That is the right thing to do. Rather than hoping and crying about it, what will happen tomorrow, what will happen after, not feel the anxiety about it. That's Krishna's point. So that is where Shanti comes. Shanti means Krishna. Any Mahalpa, if you take look at their life, you will see this one quality they had in abundance in them. They had this quality called Shanti. They had such qualities of Shanti inside that they were willing to tolerate anything. They were willing to tolerate anything that happened to this body, they will tolerate with that. So that is the reason why when Krishna started speaking Bhagavad Gita, one of the first thing he spoke was this thing, isn't it? Matras prashastu kaundeya shitoshna sukadukhada agama apayino nityam tam tidikshasu bharada. Normally such an instruction you would have expected at the very end, but instead it has come in the beginning itself in the Bhagavad Gita. In the second chapter itself it has come. So the remedy Krishna has spoken there for this problem. Problems with the body, Krishna has spoken the remedy for that in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita itself. So it is, people have this argument that in order to execute bhakti, I need a good body. Therefore, I have to constantly pamper the body and look after the body. This is misunderstanding. This is not correct. The right understanding is spiritual advancement, if you want, then you have to free yourself from the body. There is no other escape route. Because if we get more and more attached to the body, it is not helping us in the spiritual level. Sometimes you can delay your misery for some time. You can postpone your prarabdham for some time by various means. But that doesn't solve the problem really. So here you will notice another thing, that how great you are on spiritual level, escaping from the bodily problems is not possible. It's not possible. One person asked this question to a great sannyasi. He says to him, how to become completely free from the free of this misery? How to become completely free from the misery? And the reply the Mahalpa has given to him, very amazing reply he gave him. He says, you ask this same question when you are happy. It's an interesting question, isn't it? An interesting answer as well. He says, how do I get freed from the miseries of this life? So when you are experiencing misery, you are asking this question. But if you can ask this question when you are happy, he said, that how to get yourself free from this happiness. Can you ask that question, he said. Then you will get the answer, he said. Then you will know what it is. He says, because we don't ask that question when we are feeling, when we are having pleasure in this world, isn't it? When we have any pleasure in this world, we don't ask this question. We accept everything what happens. So in other words, when happiness comes, you are willing to accept it. And when the distress comes, you want to resist that. This is our problem, is it not? Normally that's our nature. Happiness is coming, you don't complain. Oh, it's okay. Fine. More. When distress comes, you have become very, want to resist at all possible cost, isn't it? So, who is doing this? This is done by that personality inside. Ahangaram, vyaktitvam, individuality. Or personality is doing that, isn't it? Jiva, that's who is doing that. So
That personality is desiring happiness very strongly inside. That's what it is coming from. Personality inside is desiring happiness very strongly and hating the distress also very strongly inside. Inside, that personality likes happiness and hate the distress so strongly inside. If you are able to accept the distress happily, and when the happiness comes, if you can be indifferent to that, such a person, in him, that personality will disappear in due course. This is Krishna's point here. When the happiness comes, you should be able to remain indifferent to that, not getting influenced by that. And when the distress comes, if you are able to accept it in a happy state, all the distress what is comes. This is spiritual life. Otherwise, what does it mean all this? That Krishna is saying to this Vatrasparshastu Kaunteya actually means that verse. That Agama Bhaino Nityam Tam, that Krishna of course spoke in a very condensed form. He put it in that verse. Tam Tidikshasu Bharata. That's all he said. But the underlying principle is like this. When the distress comes, you should be able to accept it, knowing very well it's for your own benefit that it has come. Because by accepting that distress, actually you're making progress on the spiritual side. On the other hand, if any happiness comes in life, in a similar way, you should be able to remain indifferent to that. And such a person, that vyaktitvam or personality or individuality will slowly disappear. We all have strong personality, individuality inside, isn't it? We are fighting against that. That is why Krishna is saying there in the Bhagavadam, Svabhava Vijayam Shaviryam, he says. Shaviryam is fighting against your own Svabhavam, isn't it? This is our Svabhavam. What is the Svabhavam? Svabhavam is this, to fight against this thing what Krishna has spoken here. When happiness comes, happily accepting that, and when distress comes, completely rejecting that. This is the Svabhavam, everybody. And Krishna says, if you can fight against that, Svabhava Vijayam Shaviryam, Krishna says he is a hero in this world. Not one who has gone and conquered so many countries. He is not the hero. Krishna's hero is this person, Svabhava Vijayam Shaviryam, who can accept all happiness and not being completely indifferent to that. And when the distress comes in life, able to accept it without any resistance from inside. So, when the distress comes, what is the solution? In Vivekachudamani you will see this. Sahanam, sarvadukhanam, sarvadukham. Let that be any distress in this world, let it come. Sahanam, sarvadukhanam. How? Apradigara purvagam. Without any revenge, able to tolerate that. Apradigara purvagam. Not being revengeful to anyone, any inimical feelings towards anyone. In such a state, if you can tolerate everything, that is what this means. To accept all the distress happily, then sahanam sarvadukkanam apradigara purvagam. What else? Chinda vilaparehidam says. Vilaparehidam means not lamenting about that. Oh, this has come, that has come. Problem has come like this in life, that has happened in life, this has happened in life. Not complaining anything about it. That's all a part of this material body's activities. Body does all these things. That is called tridiksha. So whatever distress comes, tolerating that, there is no other solution to the problem. There is no other solution to the problem. This same conclusion, any great personality if you take, you will see this one quality in them. Lord Buddha had the same attitude, willing to tolerate anything. Even in the case of Jesus Christ, if you see, when he was crucified, he also spoke in the same words, isn't it? That they couldn't accept this, that they are willing to see these things, because they know the so-called happiness and distress is in relationship with the body. Self is never experiencing any distress. That is the important thing. Soul has no happiness or distress. Happiness and distress is all in relationship with the body and the mind. Body and the mind. So, sahanam sarvadukhanam apradigara purvagam. So, there, most of these Mahatmas or the great devotees, they've always never complained about it. Never complained about it. So, the way when happiness comes, how you are willing to accept it. In the same way, when distress comes also, if you are willing to accept it, Krishna says here, what will happen? If you do that, what will happen is you will transcend the distress. You will transcend the distress. Distress won't go, but you will transcend the distress. Transcending means that distress is not anymore a factor in your life. You have transcended that. So, and behind that distress, the experience of the self, of the soul will happen. Externally, you may have distress. You will have pain. All kinds of problems will be there. But, and sometimes, when your thought waves, if it is in identification with the body, it will, that will sometimes give you some problem also. It will give you some problems also. But inside, the jiva will at the same time will experience a happiness in this, in all these things. Even when the distress is in the body or distress is in the mind, still from the self, from the soul, there is will be this rays of happiness will come from within. While externally you are experiencing the pain and miseries of this world, internally from the self there will be a manifestation of happiness for one who is tolerating that. That's why they say there is a deep ecstasy in pain. Deep ecstasy in pain. This is how they put it. So that chandi, the word Krishna has used there, tolerance means sahanam. Sahanam, tolerance, in other words, chandi. We'll read that. Tolerance means, Prabhupada mentions, that one should be practiced to bear insult and dishonor from others. If one is engaged in the advancement of spiritual knowledge, there will be so many insults and so much dishonor from others. This is expected because material nature is so constituted. Prakriti, in other words. Prakriti is created like that. Even a boy like Prahlada, who only 5 years old, was engaged in the cultivation of spiritual knowledge, was endangered when his father became antagonistic to his devotion. Father tried to kill him in so many ways, Prahlada tolerated him. So for making advancement in spiritual knowledge, there may be many impediments, but we should be tolerant and continue our progress with determination. Same thing. So, sahanam sarvadukhanam apradigara purvagam chinda vilavarahidam sa tidiksha idikadhyade. Tidiksha chandi. That's the same thing. After that, the next one, amanitvam adambitvam ahimsa chandi. Four things we have seen. Next one is arjavam. Arjavam is the next one. Arjavam, Prabhupada has given the translation as simplicity. Isn't it? Arjavam, actually, to make it a little bit more easier, that another word, Arjavam, comes from the word Rijitvam. Arjuna was considered Arjuna had this great quality in him, Rijitvam. Rijitvam means that straightforwardness. People are generally, they speak one thing and they keep something else in the mind, isn't it? That is not Rijitvam. That is diplomacy. That is not good in spiritual life. What direct Krishna says, what you feel inside, what you speak is what you feel inside. Your words are truthful to the words, what your thoughts are. Thoughts and the words, they are the same. They do not any difference. So Arjuna was like that. That's Arjuna's greatest quality. And only to such a person, Bhagavad Gita should be spoken. That is why neither Yudhishthira, Bhima, Nagula, Sahadeva, none of them were as qualified as Arjuna was for hearing Bhagavad Gita. Because of this nature in Arjuna, Krishna says about that. So sometimes you can see that people keep something inside and they speak in a different way. Associating with such people is not advisable. It's not advisable. Because there is no connection between their words with their mind and their body. With their body and their mind and their words, there is no connection. So three different persons are speaking. The problem with that, in doing that, is it will create conflict inside. If you do like that for long time, that will create a conflict inside. And conflict means, what does truthfulness mean? Truthfulness means that what you feel inside, you should express it properly. And you keep something inside and you say something different, that means you have created already a conflict inside. That is called Rijibuddhi. It is not Rijibuddhi. So, there is not Arjavam. Krishna says here that the word they use in Shastram is Kutilata. Kutilata means this, that duplicity. It's speaking one thing and doing something else. So, just like you can see sometimes we ask people, they'll ask you, how are you? I say, fine. But, are you really fine? Or the person who has asked also, he has really not seriously thought about it, isn't it? So, and after he has gone, he says, oh, he's asking me how I am. You feel thoughts comes like that. So practically what it means is that if any thoughts comes later on against what you have spoken, then that is that kutilata inside. So by doing like that, what will happen is, you will develop a double personality inside. In course of time, this will happen. You will develop a double personality inside. That means one personality who speaks one thing and your own personality in a different way. Two personalities in one body, it will be functioning for a long time then. Afterwards, that will happen. So that is why the address is, and this conflict will start fighting each other inside. And that is when the distress comes. That is when the disturbances comes in the mind. When you have followed this process of not having arjavam or Krishna Prabhupada calls it simplicity, and we develop this habit of speaking one thing and thinking something different, if it carries on for a long time, we will develop a dual personality inside, and this personality, dual personality will fight each other, and conflict will build up inside. One has to be careful about that. And that is where, that is why Krishna is advising here, amanitvam, adambitvam, ahimsa, chandi, arjavam. Arjavam is important. Then the next one is acharyopasanam, Krishna says, isn't it? Acharyopasanam. This word, acharyopasanam, it is a very important one, and it is the most powerful one, but it is the most difficult one to get it. It is the most powerful one, it is the most effective one, and it is the most difficult one to get it. That is what the difference is. Acharyopasanam, if you have a proper, let's understand what this word acharyopasanam means. In a gross level, if you take that word, acharyopasanam, it says here, as for acceptance of a spiritual master, that's essential, because that is acharyopasanam. Because without the instruction of a bona fide spiritual master, one cannot progress in the spiritual science. One should approach the spiritual master with all humility and offer him all services so that he will be pleased to bestow his blessings upon the disciple. Because a bona fide spiritual master is representative of Krishna, he bestows any blessings upon his disciple that will make the disciple immediately advanced without the disciples following the regulated principles. Or the regulated principles will be easier for one who has served the spiritual master without reservation. You know why Prabhupada has put that like that? To show the strength of that acharyopasanam. He's saying here, it is amazing, isn't it? He says here that even if he, without the disciples following the regulated principles, he will make progress. That is how powerful acharyopasanam is. That's the importance. So of all the qualities mentioned in this, this acharyopasanam is the most powerful one, and acharyopasanam is the easiest one to do also. But the difficulty is finding that acharya to whom upasana has to be performed. That is the most difficult thing. And that when you have that, then this will do. You don't need to worry about amanitvam, adamitvam, because acharyopasanam will sort out all the other problems. That is the benefit of the acharyopasanam. Acharyopasanam will clear up your amanitvam problem, adambitvam, ahimsa, chandi, arjavam, all other things what comes later on this. All that problems will be sorted if there is acharyopasanam. But that is the most difficult thing to find. Now, let's understand this. So, in a gross level, that acharya whom you are performing upasana, that personality, should be a person who is very fixed in spiritual life. That's the most important thing. Fixed in the sense that he should follow dharma very strictly. He should follow adharmayam, he should not do anything against the principles of dharma. And like in the Upanishad says, Shamilpani Shrotriyam Brahmanishtam. He must have studied Shastram very, very well. Very well. And he should be always situated in that state, Brahmanishta. If all these things are there in that Acharya, problem is solved. But if it's not there, you cannot have Acharya Upasanam. It is not possible. And not only that, that person should have compassion for others. Should have compassion for others. He should have the capacity to listen to your difficulties in life and able to reflect through that and give you the right solution to your problem in spiritual life. All these things has to come from Acharya. Acharya has to do that. And above all, he should not respect you. Respect what? Respect your false ego or ego inside. Rather, he is so compassionate to you that he will only respect yourself inside, the soul inside. He respects your soul. He doesn't respect your ego inside. Such a person, and he should not respect your ego, he will respect yourself. And at the same time, throughout your life, you should be able to get the instructions from him at the appropriate time when you require. And if there is a person who is centered around all this, such a center is called Acharya. That center is Acharya. Acharya means that. Generally there is a definition, Acharya, Acharanam iti Acharya, one who follows everything. But Acharya's life, if you look at it, this is their qualifications. They must be self-realized, they should have studied the Shastram very well, they should be living according to Dharmam in this world. And beyond than that, they should have infinite compassion for the others. And if you approach him, he should be able to take you into his lap and look after you in your spiritual life and give you all the help what you need. He should not respect your ego, he should respect yourself instead. And he should be able to give you the timely instructions what is required to elevate you into his state. All these are a requirement expected from a Acharya. Otherwise it is not. Acharya is not just because you can stamp something out. Oh, he's an Acharya. No. Acharya's qualification. That is why this Acharya Upasanam is to find a personality like that and to serve him is important. That is very difficult to find. That is the most difficult thing. Isn't it? So Acharya Upasanam means serving that person, serving him all the time, which means that you cannot put any conditions on that. When we are looking for someone like which will suit our convenience, isn't it? That's how we enter into spiritual life. Somebody, if we can find someone, nowadays it has become like that. Gurus also knows that very well, and the disciples also know well, equally in the same way. They mutually have an understanding. But that is not Acharya Upasanam. Acharya Upasanam means this, that Acharya should understand the disciple, and Acharyas are frightened today to hurt the disciple, so they won't say anything. Disciples also saying, he's all not bothering me too much. If this is the attitude, it won't work. How will it work? How can it work? Krishna is saying here, Acharya Upasanam, that one word is enough. And this is what is expected. That relationship has to be very, very close, and it is expected that if any benefit has to come from that, that relationship has to mature in this way. That he should be Shamilpani, Shotriyam, Parikshalogan, Karmajidan, Nurvedamaya, Lagradakradena, Tadbijyanartham, Sadgurumeva, Abhigachet, Shamilpani, Shrotriyam, Brahmanishtam. In the Upanishad it says like that. Parikshalogan, this is when such an Acharya is found, what state is he? Upanishad is saying, Parikshalogan karmachidan, nurvedamayal agradakradena, tadvijanartham sadgurumeva abhigechen samitpani shrotriyam brahmanishtam. Such is that qualification of that Acharya expressed there. And in principle, what it means is that Acharya has to be fully fixed in that state. Means, fully realized the self, and he has studied the Shastram very well. Because there are people who are self-realized, but they have not studied Shastram well.
they may find that Acharya's position is not possible for them. Because Acharya said is, he should know the Shastram well, he should realize the truth also, and apart from that, he also mentions that he should be Brahmanishtha. Brahmanishtha means always fixed in that state. Above all, he should be very compassionate to the disciple who has come to him. Plus, he should not respect your ego, which means he had the full right to chastise the disciple at all levels, whatever he wants to do it, if it is to be beneficial to the disciple for his spiritual advancement. Plus, he should have infinite compassion for your conditioned state, that you want to free yourself from the bodily existence. So, in such a person, if you find a person with all these qualifications in there, and he is the center, and that center is called Acharya. That center is the Acharya. So, Acharya Upasana means, Acharya Upasana means that before this service starts through this Acharyam, his Upasana actually help you to release from Manam, Dambham, Himsa, and this quality what we talked about, Chandi. All these things will come from Acharya Upasana. Acharya Upasana power is like that. That you don't have to independently fight against these things. Amanitvam, Adambitvam, Ahimsa, Chandi. All those things, you don't have to worry about it. It will all come in a natural way in Acharya Upasana. In Acharya Upasana. Because by simply being with him in his presence, in a natural way, he knows how to treat these problems in us, inside us. So there are examples like this. I mentioned also many times before, I think probably this story, that they are infinitely compassionate to, they are not looking at friend and enemy to their disciples. They don't see them in that way. In the Maharshi's ashram, there was one instance one person came to the ashram. And generally, you will notice this thing in every ashram or temple or situation like that. Depending the management of the ashram or temple or whatever institution, generally what they'll do when a new person comes, management has got enough problems there. So they are always short of manpower. So they will use them for whatever purpose they want manpower. For them that's more important, the job has to be done. They are not too concerned about anything else, is there? They are not bothered. So naturally you'll end up first in the kitchen or in the toilet cleaning or whatever that is, they will engage you in there. First, they'll say to you, oh, this is the first thing what you have to do. Actually, that is not the first thing to do. First thing is to hear Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam after that. Otherwise, it won't last very long. It will go one day, it will stop. So, this is exactly what has happened. This, unfortunately, but because the managers have this necessity to get people to do what they want to do, that they will engage people that do this service, they will keep you in that service as long as they can, before they give you a release note from that. So in that process, what happens is normally that for a long period of time you will get absorbed in this, and then you will know one day that what have I learned so far, so many years I've spent in this way. So this happened in this ashram also. In Ramana Maharshi's also, the same thing happened with one person. They came, he was not very well educated. Whereas you will notice, even in our own movement also, when an educated or highly educated person, he knows when he comes in what he wants, and he knows what he wants to do. Some people's eye is on the money, some people's eye is on the followers, some people's eye is on the popularity. So everyone has different wavelengths they are operating. And they all will do what they want to do at the end. Some people are very calculative, they know what they want from the moment. So when they come, they will go in that direction, position important for them. For them it's very important, that position. So, but in this case what happened was, this one person who came, he was not very well educated. He was not very well educated. So naturally, kitchen, go. Cooking, there's plenty to be done there, cutting the vegetables onwards, to making everything. So he was sent to kitchen. So when he went to kitchen,
He spent there many years in the kitchen. He won't come for any programs. He had no satsangam. Never had any opportunity to understand what was going on in the ashram. He just took it, this is my spiritual life, and went into the kitchen and spent the whole time there. What happened? One day, due to vasana inside, he met up with a girl in the town. In the town, he met up with a girl and he went and did something wrong with her. The news, as soon as this happened, she came to the ashram. Then this incident happened. So all these intelligent managers and all that, they went to Maharshi and told him, we can't have him here, throw him out from here. He has created a bad name for us, this, that and the other. Maharshi thought about this a little bit deeper. Maharshi was intelligent to see these things through. He knew his managers well, what they are like. Everywhere it's the same thing. The story is not different anywhere else. So all the same story. So Maharshi thought about this and they recommended that he should not be allowed to come in. So many years he has done this service in the temple, in that ashram, and they wanted to throw him out. They had no mercy, no compassion, nothing towards him. They just wanted to get it off him. And they even told him that if he comes and starts living here, it will be a very bad name for the ashram. This is how they put it to him. So Maharshi didn't say anything. This person left the ashram because of the terrible pressure from the temple management and various other people, because there was all sorts of people in that temple, very highly learned scholars and very advanced people in the spiritual path. And what they did was, they found out one lawyer also who was there, a solicitor or lawyer who was there, who could speak these things in a logical way. They put him as their representative to go and speak to Maharshi about it. So he did all that, talking to Maharshi. Maharshi heard everything, very quietly he heard everything. A few days have gone. After a few weeks or so, this person felt like coming back to the ashram again. He couldn't stay away from the ashram. So he wanted to come back. So when he came back, Maharshi was standing there. When he was walking into the ashram, he saw him. He called him. He said, come, he said. And he called him and took him to his room. And he told him, from now on, you stay with me, he said. You will be my personal secretary or assistant. You stay with me, he said. And then what he did was, when this happened, all the others who were against him, who spoke against him before, they went up to Maharshi and said, Maharshi, what have you done? What will people say about you like that? So Maharshi says to them, come everybody, he says. And using him, Maharshi told them what he wanted to say to them. Using him, he says, Ramakrishna was his name. He says, Ramakrishna, don't worry about it. He said, only mistake you have done is, you have done something and you are caught. They are also doing exactly the same thing, only thing they are not getting caught. This is a simple principle. In spiritual life, this is simple. It's going on everywhere. You cannot say that it's not happening in one place. It's happening everywhere. In every ashram, every temple, you will see this is going on. That the stronger one will exploit the weak. That is come from the material world. They are not all realized souls who are sitting there. So that tendency and propensity is very much there. And we should see these things properly. Otherwise, we'll join the best one, the strongest group. We'll go along with that, thinking that they are all perfect. They are not perfect. So this is what happened. So using Ramakrishna, Maharshi said to them, Ramakrishna, the only mistake you have done is that you did things and you were caught. They did things, they are not caught yet. They will also get caught one day, he said. And then he said to them, he said to those who were present there, that why did this happen? Because he didn't get satsangam properly at the right time when he should have it. You have put him in such a situation without giving him an opportunity to hear Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam or any of the Upanishads. And result was that he was never educated properly and he left and this fall down happened. Can you blame him for that? He asked them. They couldn't answer. Everybody kept quiet. Nobody could answer anything about it. So Mahatmas don't see us educated, uneducated, rich or poor, famous or infamous. They see the soul in a person. And that is valuable no matter who it is. It is Krishna's presence inside that body that matters. So, so our false ego gets hurt when they talk to us like this, isn't it? When they speak about these things like this. So normally when we when people make some mistakes like that, things happen like that, normal tendency is to beat him up and send him away. He said, "Oh, you created a bad name for us. We are all very properly situated. You are the one who has caused all the problems." But if you look back into the whole situation in the temple, you will see there are many people doing worse things than this. And they get away with it. Worse things than this is done in the temple or in the ashram, and they get away with it. But this man, somehow he was not so sophisticated to do it in a very in a clever way. Therefore he was caught. That's all it is. But there are people who are doing worse and they were not caught. And they will come out later on as much more acharyas or advanced devotees, and they will preach the truth to the world. So it happens in this world, all these things. So, so this karunyam, this is compassion. This what you see in an acharya, this is called compassion. That he did not look into Ramakrishna's background, rather he found out what caused this situation. Mainly because he didn't get the right association at the right time. The result was that he fell into the trap of Maya in this way. So, knowing our weaknesses and able to correct those weaknesses at the right time is the qualification of an acharya. Knowing our weaknesses and able to correct those weaknesses at the right time is the qualification of an acharya. Because, because before they have realized the truth, they have gone through all these weaknesses in their own life. That's why they know about it. You see, there's a big difference there. Whereas if you dress up a person as a guru or acharya, it won't happen. One who has gone through all these problems of our weaknesses, what we have got, because they have gone through all these things, and not only in the body, including the mind and the subtle body, all the weaknesses they know about it. In other words, in our gross body, in our subtle body, in our causal body, wherever there is, whatever weaknesses are stacked up, they will know that very easily. And they know very well, till all this is cleaned up, one person is not going to become perfect. They know about that. And many, many lifetimes, not before they have come to that stage, in several lifetimes before, they have gone through this process, isn't it? And therefore, they have seen all that things in previous life and they have the memory of that, what they have gone through in their previous lifetimes. Therefore, that is why that compassion is coming from them. People always ask this question, "I don't feel much compassion for others." They say like that, isn't it? Although, although Shastram is telling we have to preach, we have to show compassion to others. Sometimes devotees say, "I'm not feeling any compassion for others. This is what can I do?" The reason is this, that we also, this compassion will only come when you yourself has gone through that distress in life. Then you will feel compassion for others. Otherwise you won't feel any compassion for others, isn't it? So compassion comes like that. And this will only happen in the great personalities, Mahatmas, great souls. There is compassion. There is, and that compassion is due to, in several lifetimes, they have gone through this. And it's all in their memory. They know about this, what the problems are. They are not looking at life like the way we are looking at life. They are seeing it's a continuation of several lives before. And because on those lifetimes they have gone through this distress, suffered heavily, and they have passed through all that and transcended everything, so therefore they have compassion for everyone. They are not picking and choosing anyone. Normally you see people pick and choose very much, isn't it? The clever ones, they will make contacts with the people in the position. In the ashram, all this you can see this. The clever ones, they will make the contacts with the top ones, and they will move in that circle only. The others are ordinary ones for them. They make these separation themselves in this. What do they call it as clubs? They form the club within the club. Already there is a club, and then so many other clubs inside that club. And people make all these clubs and they call it spiritual. That is the most difficult thing to accept. So that's not spiritual. Spirituality is only possible when these qualities are there, there is spirituality. Otherwise, it's like any other mundane club, Rotary Club or Lions Club, another club running there. That's all it is. So Krishna is saying to us, you have to look at it this way, otherwise you won't understand Bhagavad Gita. Krishna is saying to us, Acharya Upasana. Why did he say that? Why we need an Acharya and why we need Upasana? For this reason only, that Acharya is necessary. Who should be? Pariksha Logan, Karmajidan, Nirveda Mayal, Agrida Kridena, Tad Vijnanartham, Sagurumeva, Abhigachel, Shamilpani, Shrotriyam, Brahmanishtam. His qualifications are spoken like this in the Upanishads. Such a person, he says, approach him and inquire from him, serve him submissively, you will get the result. He will elevate you very fast, but you have to find that person. That's the most difficult thing. That is the plus, you should be willing to surrender to him. That's another thing. These two things. That is why in the Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna says that word, Tad Vidhi Pranibhadena Pariprasnena Sevaya Upadekshandide Jnanam Jnaninas Tattvadarshina. Tattvadarshi, he has to be a Tattvadarshi. Otherwise, this relationship won't happen. This relationship won't happen. In order that the maturity in spiritual life comes by knowing these things. So, here. So that is the important thing. Now, there is something interesting here. As I mentioned that, this jnani is created after going through several lifetimes. So this karunyam or compassion will not come otherwise in a person. When Vasishtha was born, Vasishtha told him to go to the world, but Vasishtha could not feel any compassion to anyone at that point, and therefore what Brahma mentioned was, Brahma first cursed him and first told him that first you experience the distress of everyone. So for a very short period of time, a few moments, Vasishtha was put through all the miseries of this world. To know the misery first. Because if you don't know the misery of others, how will you feel compassion for others? Vasishtha didn't know what misery means when he was born. He was a jnani, isn't it? He is the spiritual master of the whole solar dynasty, Vasishtha, who gave us Yoga Vasishtam also. Ramachandra's guru and the teacher, like Sandivani Maharshi to Krishna. So Vasishtha, when he took control, when he was born, you will see his birth mentioned. Mariji Atri Angirasya Pulasya Pulaha Kradu Brigu Vasishta Dakshascha Dashamatatra Narada, Bhagavadam says. The 10 Prajapatis, when the creation began, along with Mariji Atri Angirasya Pulasya Pulaha Kradu Brigu Vasishta Dakshascha Dashamatatra Narada, Narada Maharshi. These 10 personalities were born, and Vasishtha was born. By birth itself, he was a realized soul. Birth itself. So what is the problem? When you are born with self-realization, then you won't know what the problems of this world is, isn't it? So when Vasishtha was sent here, he didn't feel any compassion to anyone. So then what Brahma did was, he put him through a lot of distress for some time to know what the distress is. Only after that, to create this compassion in Vasishtha first. That's what he did to him. And after that, Vasishtha is asking Lord Brahma, instruct me on spiritual life. After this, instruct me on spiritual life. And then Brahma sends him to the world, to material world, to see what goes on here. And so when he was sent here, he started seeing the problems of this world, Vasishtha. And after that, compassion developed inside in him, and he started acting in the proper way to others, because otherwise it will not happen, isn't it? So so this is a fact with the self-realization, that realized persons, personalities like Ramana Maharshi and others, they have to go through in this life and several lifetimes before they had come to realize this situation that has come to that, and therefore they have
understood that and they acted in that way. They had tremendous compassion. Where normally you won't feel compassion, but they had that compassion for others because they knew where the problem is with the students there who had come there. When a child plays in the mud or on the dirty places, when the child comes back, mother picks up the child, cleans the child nicely, puts fresh clothes on and sends him out again, isn't it? In a similar way, Acharya's presence is like that. Acharyopasana we are talking about. Acharya's relationship with the student is like that. One who has surrendered to Acharya is very much similar to that situation. That you are going to him with all the dirt inside. Dambham, manam, and all other bad qualities what is inside, and it is his responsibility to clear it up from inside, remove everything from inside. So being sitting next to him alone is not sufficient. You should be able to live according to his instructions when he tells you, and that's where problem comes. Often when you want them to tell you what suits you, and then that will not work. It is a center where you want to surrender your ego, where you can completely surrender your ego. That's that center. Acharya is that center where you completely surrender your ego, isn't it? So only those people who are living with the Acharya but at the same time who are taking his instruction seriously and following it through, such a person is doing Acharyopasana. Otherwise, not. And such a person, that is proper Acharyopasana. Serving Acharya's body, that is okay. That is acceptable. Beneficial also. But that is not sufficient. That's not sufficient. Because some people, you will notice that, they just want to be with their guru. And they are busy with looking after guru's personal affairs. Travel tickets and prasadam and taxiing, this kind of seva. They just want to do a few things like this and please them. That's nothing criticized about that, but that is not the ultimate, what is expected from that person. Because if you receive an acharya, sanidhyam, particularly in jnana sadhana or yoga sadhana, it is very important there that this Acharya Sanidhyam is necessary. Sanidhyam means his direct association is very necessary, both in Jnana Margam and in the Yoga Margam. In the Bhakti process, it is a little different. What is the difference in the Bhakti Margam compared to Jnana Margam and Yoga Margam is this. In the Bhakti Margam, the one way it is easier, in the sense that you are always surrendered to Krishna. You are always surrendered to Krishna. And you are engaged in Krishna's service all the time. Fully surrendered to Krishna. In which case, if you don't have Acharyopasana, still you will get a lot of benefit from that. Because provided that bhakti should be proper bhakti, only then. Suppose instead of surrender, you had nobody to surrender to, Acharya. You could not surrender to anyone. And you couldn't get that Acharyopasana opportunity to anyone. It is absolutely necessary in the process of knowledge and process of yoga. But in the process of bhakti, it's not compulsory, mandatory in other words. But in the bhakti process, if you are completely surrendered to Krishna, and if your bhakti is genuine, if the bhakti is genuine, what will happen is that Krishna will provide that sanidhyam. It is upasana it is, isn't it? So, if he is experiencing Krishna's presence inside the heart as Antaryami, then all his weaknesses will be cleared up by Krishna inside. Antaryami will clear up everything from inside. Now, why do we go and surrender to Acharya? Because we recognize we have a lot of weaknesses inside us.
isn't it? This dambham, manam, krotham, parushyam, all other words what is mentioned. So if in the presence of a realized soul, like Krishna has spoken, in his association what happens is that you are willing to surrender to that authority of that person. If you surrender to such a person, and if he is a proper qualified acharya, he is in a position to take out one after the other all your shortcomings or weaknesses inside and clear your way for self-realization. He can do that. But this is particularly important in the case of jnana sadhana, yoga sadhana and karma sadhana. All these three, karma yogam, jnana yogam and yoga margam, they are important, ashtanga yogam. Bhakti margam, it's not absolutely essential like that, because if the same acharya's presence, if it is experienced by Krishna's presence inside, it is possible that this can happen. Surrendering to Krishna, in other words. But that surrender has to be proper. It should not be an artificial thing. If you are properly surrendered to Krishna, completely dependent on Krishna, and execute spiritual life in that way, most of these weaknesses, Krishna, as Santariyami, is capable of taking it out. After all, who is spiritual master? He is the Antaryami who has come as the spiritual master, isn't it? Atmano Guru Atmaiva Purushasya Visheshada Pratyakshena Anumanabhyam Shreyasam Anuvindade, Bhagavadam says. So Atmano Guru Atmaiva, this Atma inside, Guru is not a person. Guru is a tattvam. It is the tattvam that you have to take it. The tattvam is the Guru principle. Guru principle is this, that Krishna manifests outside as a person in front of you as an acharya for you to take surrender to him. That is what the opportunity gives to you in the form of an acharya. And by surrendering to him, he should be that type of person who has appeared like that with all these qualifications, what Krishna has spoken. And such a person's association will clean up that person's inside and you will get released. If not, alternatively, if he is processing in the Bhakti Margam, it is possible that all these weaknesses can be cleared by Antaryami inside. So, this will only happen in Bhakti process, that's another side to it, that even the very subtle thoughts, when it comes inside, when you know Krishna is inside, and even in your subtle thoughts, it will get purified, even in a subtle level. That means gross things, of course, it has to stop. But more difficult thing is the subtle thoughts inside. Even those subtle thoughts will get purified by Antaryami inside in the bhakti process. In other words, you have to recognize Krishna's presence in the heart. You have to be completely dependent on Krishna. And in all instances, that looking for help from Krishna and guidance from help. Only in that situation, that devotee will make that process, make that progress. So that is the important thing. So that's why we're talking about Acharya Upasanam, isn't it? So Acharya Upasanam, Krishna mentions here that the Bhakti Margam has got this simplicity. Bhakti Margam has got this simplicity. In Jnana Margam and in the sadhana process all, Acharya Sanidhyam is necessary. Acharya Sanidhyam is necessary. It's not possible that without Acharya's presence to develop this. Because you need that presence to surrender your ego. But that is why all these modern arrangements, what we make in the name of spiritual life, will not work. It will go on like it will keep the institution going, but in effect, it will not have the desired result from that. And unfortunately, this spiritual life requires that personal presence, sanidhyam, is necessary. So, acharya means, what does it mean? Salsangam, isn't it? Constant association with him. Sadhu sangam. And you should have someone. When he sees some fault in us, he should be able to point it out to us. This is the fault in you, and you should be able to take that in that spirit, in the right spirit. In other words, you need people who will control your life in the proper way. And that is what Krishna says here. That that means you should be able to willing to surrender to that person. If you are not willing to surrender, then it is not going to help. Even Acharya Upasana won't help. You may continue Acharya Upasana, but if you are not willing to listen to him, how will it help? It's not going to help. So that is why Krishna says here that simply by studying Bhagavad Gita or going to the temple alone or ashram, these things may not happen. Bhagavad Gita one has to study, and in solitude he has to execute his sadhana. That is also important. He has to study Bhagavad Gita, execute the sadhana, and at the same time he should also look for an opportunity to associate with people who have some realizations, and from there to absorb these principles of Bhagavad Gita. So, because the advantage is that when you associate with them, then they will point out your faults in life. And when they point out that fault, you should be able to, willing to take it. Otherwise it is no use, isn't it? So that's why it is spoken like that. So when they point out those faults, we should be able to accept that with humility and able to surrender to that. So those who have got association like that for many years, they are very, very fortunate. So the more strict they become, or when they become very very strict in their dealings with others, you are fortunate accordingly. Accordingly, you are very fortunate. But you have to remember that when they are doing that, inside their heart they have tremendous love for you. That's why they are doing that. And only if that loving relationship is there, that will work. If it is done on a different level, it will not operate. That means the student must have this respect for that acharya to surrender to him, and he should accept that surrender as his... why is he surrendering? He is surrendering because he wants to get rid of that ego from inside. That's why he's surrendering. The acharya, on the other hand, he has to have that compassion for this person, that he has come to take his shelter and able to look after him in his spiritual life properly. All these things. So, that is that about that. So, this is leads into another important topic, which will continue in a few minutes. Chedo darpanamarjanam vavamaha davagni nirvapanam shreya kaidava chandriga vidaranam vidyavadhu jivanam anandambudhi vardhanam pradipata purnam radaswadanam sarvatna supanam param vijayade shri krishna sankirtanam namnamakari bahuda nijasarva shakti tatrarpida niyamida smaranena kalam एतादृशं तव कृपा भगवान् ममाभि दुर्दैवमीदृशमिहाजनि नानुरागाः तृणारविशुनीचेन करोरवि सहिष्णुना अमानिना मानदेन कीर्तनीय सदा हरि न जनं न सुन्दरीं कवितां वा जगदीशकामयीं मम जन्मनि जन्मनीश्वरे भवदात् भक्तिरहैदुगे त्वयि ऐ नन्दतनुज किङ्करं पतितामां विषमे भवाम्बुदौ कृपया तव पादपङ्कजस्थितधूलिसदृशं विचिन्तयाम् युगधारया वदनं गद्गदरुद्धया गिरा पुलगैर्निचितं कदा वपुः तव नाम ग्रहणे भविष्यति युगायिदं निमेषेण चक्षुषा प्राविशायिदम् शून्यायिदं जगल् सर्वं गोविन्दविरहेण मे आश्लिष्य वा पादरदां पिनष्टु माम् अदर्शनां मर्महदां करोतु वा यथा तथा वा विदधा दुलं वडो मत्प्राणनाथास्तु न एव नापराः अमानित्वमदम्बित्वं
അഹിം സാക്ഷാന്തിരാർജവം ആചാര്യോപാസനം ശൗചം സ്ഥൈര്യം ആത്മവിനിഗ്രഹ.
That is the word we were looking at. So, amanitvam means manino bhavo manitvam, almanaha shlakhanam tadabhavam amanitvam.
Adhambitvam, so dharma prakadikaranam dhambitvam tadabhavam adhambitvam.
In other words, one who does not speak about oneself, his own good qualities and popping up himself, that is adhambitvam. Adhambitvam means that.
Ahimsa. അഹിംസ അഹിംസനം പ്രാണിയാം അപീഡനം ക്ഷാന്തി പരാപരാധ അപരാധപ്രാപ്തോ അവിക്രിയ ആർജവം ഹൃജുഭാവം അവക്രത്വം.
സോ അഹിംസ അഹിംസനം പ്രാണിനാം അവിപീഡനം, നോട്ട് ടു ഗിവ് പെയിൻ ടു അനദർ, എനി കൈൻഡ് ഓഫ് പെയിൻ ഇൻ എ ഗ്രോസ് ലെവൽ ഓർ ഓൺ എ സട്ടിൽ ലെവൽ, നോട്ട് ടു ഗിവ് എനി പെയിൻ ടു അനദർ ലിവിങ് എൻറ്റിറ്റി, ദാറ്റ് ഈസ് അഹിംസ വിച്ച് വി ഹാവ് ടോക്ട് അബൌട്ട് ദിസ് ആഫ്റ്റർനൂൺ. So ahimsa, we have to see that in that way, not simply on a violent level but on a subtle level what ahimsa means.
Then
kshanti, we talked about tolerance,
and arjavam. Arjavam hriju bhavaha avakratvam.
Vakrata means this crookedness in dealings, not being straightforward about things.
ആചാര്യോപാസനം മോക്ഷസാധനോ ഉപദേഷ്ടു ആചാര്യസ്യ ശുശ്രൂഷാദി പ്രയോഗേണ സേവനം.
ആചാര്യ ശുശ്രൂഷ ഓർ സേർവിംഗ് ദി ആചാര്യ ഈസ് ആചാര്യ സേവനം.
സോ കമ്മിങ് ബാക്ക് ടു ദിസ് ആചാര്യോപാസനം മെൻഷൻ ദേർ ദാറ്റ് this acharya upasanam is something important in the sense that once you receive this acharya upasanam, then life will be a success spiritually. It will be a success. But you can also see that similar instructions what come from the acharya, even sometimes if it comes from father or mother, a similar benefit will happen. Similar thing will happen. I mentioned yesterday also, many children to whom their parents were very strict. Parents were very strict with them. So that means their childhood, they didn't get much of an opportunity to engage in gratification, sense gratification. After about they grown up, they got married, they had children. They start thinking about their own childhood, how they lived in this world. And when they think about their own father, mother, they think of them as though they had the greatest respect for them, for the father and mother. When they became a father and mother, they felt a tremendous amount of respect to their own father and mother. This you can see sometimes this happening in life. On the other hand, those parents who have provided the children everything, what they wanted, anything they wanted, they purchased and given it to them, all kinds of sense gratification, what they were looking for, were provided to them. And if they want a two-wheeler or a Nintendo or any kind of all those kind of things, what's available, you given, purchased and given it to them to please them. And not only that, gave them enough money also in the name of loving them, showing love towards them. And those children who have grown up like that, because when they grow up, they know very well the mind and the body were demanding many things in their childhood. Unfortunately, they didn't get that discipline at that time. They couldn't do it on their own, and they were not getting the help what they wanted from the parents. From the parents, they didn't get it. Because what you have to remember is that body and the mind is demanding things.
isn't it? Body demands some gratification. Mind is also looking for gratification. But behind that body and the mind, there is the jiva, living force inside, isn't it? What is that jiva doing? Jiva is looking, is it possible to get some control on all these things? That is what jiva wants. Jiva is looking for, is any possibility of having some austerities in life, some penances in life, able to get some discipline in life, because jiva knows that this kind of life is not conducive for happiness. This unrestricted, uncontrolled way of life, it's not happiness. It's only on the bodily level and the mental level. Behind the body and the mind, the jiva is looking for somebody to help jiva to control its own life. So, when the child is looking for that, child does not know what it wants. It is at that time, if the parents had the intelligence to offer that to them at that time, in the proper way, if it's given to them, temporarily there may be some difficulties while dealing with the child, because child is getting influenced by everything in this world. But on a long period of time, because on his own he can't control. Jiva knows its problem. Jiva knows its problem. Jiva cannot control on its own. So only on its own it cannot control. But if an outside force comes and helps the jiva to control itself, then you are actually fulfilling the desire of the jiva rather than fulfilling the desire of the body and the mind of that jiva. So that father or mother who was very rigid in his thinking, he has given that to that child when he was growing up. And at the same time, other father has purchased everything what the jiva, what the body and the mind wanted, that child wants, child's body and the mind wanted. So the one who has given everything for the mind and the body, in course of time, that jiva will forget. This is the principle of Acharyopasanam also. That's what I'm saying this. In Acharyopasanam, it's exactly like this. That when you go and surrender to Acharya, that Acharya knows that what is good for you, and he is willing to give you that medicine, what is required to bring that discipline in life, control in the mind, control in the senses, and control of the body, things like that, and proper knowledge of the self. But instead, if he also does the same thing like the father and mother has done, simply feeding the body and feeding all the sense gratification what the child is looking for, that means the father and mother is also not seeing the jiva's needs, jiva's requirement. Instead, it's seeing the body and the mind requirement. Acharya sees the requirement of the self, not the requirement of the body and the mind. That's where the difference is. So, those who have had parents who had simply fulfilled their material desires, in course of time, they will not show any kind of respect or gratitude to the parents. They will move away because they didn't get it what they actually wanted from the parents or from the society. So that is how we can see this in the society, how it happens. Those who are living in a society where sense gratification is given the greatest priority, jiva is not looking for sense gratification when he comes. It's a misunderstanding. Jiva wants to escape from here after getting a material body. Inside, that thought is there behind the body and the mind. When the body and the mind is very strong, he wants to enjoy. But behind that, there is a desire for escape from here. And at that time, if all the society is offering is simply gratification, that jiva will revolt. It will revolt. And that revolt is coming out in these different forms like terrorism and other things. That's because of that it's coming. And then what happens? They'll go and catch hold of some philosophy where these things are very rigid. From one extreme to the exactly the other end, it will go. Neither side, there is no process of self-realization. That's why many of them, you will see, when they leave these things,
when they can't tolerate. It is not that a person takes into another religion after understanding all the philosophy or everything. It is that jiva wants to free itself from this body and the mind. That's what every jiva is looking for. Because body and mind is giving trouble to everybody. They know that. But in that process, what happens? They start their life with their children, as parents and children, isn't it? At that time, if children are given all sense gratification, and without any knowledge if they were brought up, then jiva will eventually revolt. And he is looking for something. All jivas are looking for something. But when he gets it, that's another question. But normally it's there, that rebellious nature builds up in them, and they turn into all other kinds of terrorism and other activities. If you look into this thing, what happened in Boston recently, that one young man and his younger brother, they're mentioned there. The elder man is the eldest one, 26 years old or so. He's saying, "I don't understand America," he says. He has been living there 10 years. That's what his statement is. Police is saying that. So they are also asking the question. He says, "I can't understand this place," he said. I think they came from Chechnya. So they're saying, "I can't understand this place." This was their statement. After living 10 years, he feels very lonely there. He's not able to. Why? Because his needs are different. Everything, sense gratification is not the answer to all our problems in life, is it? Simply providing for sense gratification and making this as the greatest goal of life, gratifying senses. How can there be any happiness? That's why some people sometimes will revolt in this way and it will turn into greater disaster. It's not possible, because the subtle body of everyone is quite complex thing. It's not like the gross body that it operates, isn't it? So on the other hand, those children who are given that control properly and proper understanding in life, when they grow up, they feel as though they have same respect what they had for Krishna, they feel the same respect for the parents, for what the parents have given to them. This is how important that is. So family life also is the same principle. Acharyopasanam comes into family life in this way. Acharyopasanam is the same principle, that you have found someone whom what you are looking for, and you are willing to get that from that person, is willing to offer it to you, he's showing the compassion to you and is able to give it to you. And you, on the other hand, if you have that surrender to him, and surrender your ego to him. So listening to him is important. Not that just by being with him will help the problem. He will correct the person, but when he corrects the person, you should be able to take it without any resistance. Only in that it will come. And that means, what does tapasya means? Tapasya means that jiva, till it gets that realization of his proper identity, whatever he does with this body, the mind, intelligence and ego, everything, he has to learn how to transcend that. That power is tapasya. Tapasya means that, you know, Hiranyakashipu performed penances, isn't it? The austerities and penances, the Sanskrit word is tapasya. So austerities and penances, why do they perform? Ravana performed austerities and penances. Hiranyakashipu performed austerities and penances, and so many other sages also, in the Bhagavatam you will see they were performing austerities and penances. Why do they do that? The idea behind that is to transcend the body and the mind. To transcend the body and the mind. Because that power what you receive to transcend the body and the mind is called tapasya. Tapasya is that. Tapasya means that. So wherever you get it, you will feel comfortable. You will feel happy about that. If it comes from austerities and penances, you will feel very grateful for that, for austerities and penances. Or if it comes from the mercy of a great soul, Acharya, you will feel happy with him. That's the way it is. We are all looking for that. Austerities and penances are one way. Tapasya is one way to get it. Acharya Upasanam is another way to get it. So, Acharyopasanam, the easy thing with this, Acharyopasanam is, unlike tapasya, austerities and penances, it is simple. Compared to Hiranyakashipu's tapasya and all, when you read, it is frightening, isn't it?
that strength in that man to do all this. That and Dhruva's austerities and penances. If you read all that, how difficult it is it not? But Acharya Vasanam is a lot easier than that. So Acharya Vasanam, that is why it is very important among all the qualifications spoken here. Acharya will never allow you to develop manam inside. Manam, amanitum. He will make sure that pride never develops inside. Pride never develops inside. And this adambitvam, simply in his association, it will happen in a person. These first two ones, amanitum and adambitvam, very easily you will get through Acharya Vasanam. So, in the olden days, in the Gurukulam, if it was a son of an emperor, or if it was a son of a poor brahmana, or if it was a son of an ordinary person, all of them had to go begging. All of them had to go begging, and they have to live by bringing alms from the bhiksha. They had to do it. There was no consideration there. That son of a rich person was treated in a better way, or son of the emperor was treated in a better way. No. He had to live exactly like the way all others were in the Gurukulam. They were all treated in a equal level. For this reason only. So, and if he finds any fault in the child, Guru has the control authority to correct him. He does not have to consult his father or the other people before he has to chastise the child. So there you can't have a union and all kinds of like in the modern setup where you can you can't go to the Gurukulam and say that this is my right, like the students do these days, isn't it? Students have got their own organizations nowadays everywhere. As soon as the fees is raised, they are all up in arms outside. They come out with their flags waving. They are in number 10 Downing Street, ready to protest there about that. This is not students save this. This is what happens. Whereas in Gurukulam, that system was not acceptable. They will not accept that. Because a student means what? Student means he has to learn, isn't it? But he himself, as soon as the fees is raised, he is protesting. So you can see the very underlying principle itself is wrong, the way it is operating in the modern world. That is why when the students, they come out also, they are like that, the way we see them today. This is what we get from that at the end, isn't it? So, you can't ask your rights there. In Gurukulam, there is no question of asking rights. That's a question of surrender. That's all. It's nothing else. So, that is Acharya Vasanam. The next one is Shaujam. Amanitvam, Adambitvam, Ahimsa, Shanti, Arjavam, Acharya Upasanam. Six things we have said. The next one is Shaujam. Shaujam, two things. Bahya Shaujam, Andariya Shaujam. Everything what is important in Bhagavad Gita is the internal ones. Bahya Shaujam, it is not difficult. Very explained that, isn't it? Bahya Shaujam, bodily cleanliness, isn't it? So, Shariram, body cleaning that. That is why if you look into people who are executing spiritual life seriously, they will always have achamanam, water pot next to them, isn't it? As soon as there is some ashuddhi, they'll touch the water, achamanam. So, and they will chant the holy name Achyudaya Namah or Govindaya Namah or Keshavaya Namah and purify whatever they say. So, and a little bit of water, they will take it inside and purify in that way. And keeping the body clean, that is Bahya Shaujam. Bahya Shaujam. So, mainly the principle is that keep the body clean and at the same time Parasparas Parsham, mutually touching each other to avoid. Now, this is a very important thing. People have always doubts about these things. Sometimes when you see certain things happen, people embracing each other, they think that by embracing each other, you are showing your love and affection for that person, isn't it? This is not Brahminical culture. I don't know how this came in, but it is the norm today. Initially, it was only men embracing each other and women embracing each other.
Now men start embracing women, women start embracing men. It has become more advanced now. So it is not acceptable. Krishna's point is like that. Krishna is saying touching each other is against the spiritual principle. There is a reason behind it. It's not that it is due to untouchability or anything. That is not the reason behind it. The reason, subtle reason behind it is that when gross body is touching each other, the subtle body also interacts at the same time. So all your vasanas and your hidden emotions gets transferred to the other person. And you don't know about other persons, what vasanas he has, what emotions he is carrying, it can flow back into you. Only as a protection for everyone, this system is like that. That is why in a very advanced spiritual societies, they will not touch anyone. They will not touch anybody. That is the principle. Because they know this. It's not that they hate anybody. That's not due to, don't misunderstand it that way. It's not due to hate, or it's not due to untouchability. In the modern world, they say, oh, it's untouchability. It's a very bad thing. And they keep it like this. That's not the idea behind it. It's not due to untouchability. It's due to this, that subtle vasanas inside flow very easily when you have a gross bodily contact from one person to another. That is the reason behind it. Therefore, that is why paraspara sparsham. Krishna says that sparsham. So, and we are saying, the yogis, great yogis, they have found out all these things and they have told us. It is from that these things have come. Now we are saying, oh, it's a caste system, untouchability. That is why all these problems we have. We make everybody equal, everybody embraces each other. Everyone will be very peaceful. Is there any peace in this world by embracing each other? We've not seen so far. In fact, the very people who are embraced each other, they'll take the knife and put it the next moment. So this is the opposite thing what happens. So anyway, it is not a good thing. So when we are talking about this shaujam, this is important. That as much as possible, it is not a good thing to touch. As much as possible, to stay separately, moved away from each other. So, asparsham it is called. Not sparsham, asparsham. Asparsham is good. So that is a part of shaujam. It's a part of shaujam, what Krishna is talking about. All mahalmas are like that. All mahalmas are like that. They would not like you to touch them. Don't like you to touch them. So once it so happened, Narayana Guru's case, I have read this in his own biography, it says, he used to sleep on a mat and a pillow. That was his sleeping. He used to sleep on a simple mat and a pillow. He used to sleep on that. So, and he didn't want anyone to use that. Simple mat and a simple pillow. Never want anyone to use it. And he had one relative who had a little bit enmity towards him. And he was his relative as well. So, so he comes to visit him sometimes. But he has this inimical feeling inside. So what he did was, when he was not there, he took his mat and spread it and he slept on that. And he slept on that mat and the pillow. So after some time, when Narayan Guru came back, he saw he was sleeping on his mat. What did he do? He took out the mat and set it into flames. He lighted fire onto it and burned the whole thing. So you can imagine that what he was trying to show to it was that he does not like it. It's nothing, it's not like a hate or anything towards anyone. It's a spiritual principle, because these personalities, they know in the yoga process what is favorable and what's not favorable. On a gross level, when you make bodily contact with someone, what's happening is that on a subtle level, his vasanas and his thoughts, if particularly if he has infested with various bad qualities, bad emotions, that will all get carried away into your subtle body and which you may carry with you. So, in reality, it's not that one is pure and one is impure. Both are equally pure. But at the same time, just like the earth and the water, earth is pure, water is also pure in its own way. But when they mix together, it becomes mud. Is it not? Normally it is like that, isn't it? Earth on its own is pure. Water on its own is also pure. But if you mix the earth and water, it's mud. it's muddy. In the same way, so when they join together, it becomes muddy. So always it's better to remain parasparsham, to avoid. And on this is one side. On the other side, you should not make it a law like that. That's also a problem, because then it will develop into other problems. Like suppose you have to travel in a bus. You got into the bus, you have to sit next to someone. You say to them, look, I don't touch anybody, can you get up and raise the seat for me? That's not going to work. So you have to also look at the vyavaharam when these things happen. You have to look at that side also, or in the train sometimes. Especially in places like Mumbai, when you travel in the train, you cannot travel without touching someone. You don't have to hold anything, you just can stand like this, people around you will take care of you. From all sides people are there, they're touching you. So you can't do anything about it, isn't it? So this is, you have to know where to draw the line. As much as possible, not to touch others. As much as possible. That is the solution. Also, you have to look at it. If the mother says to the child, I won't touch you anymore because it's not good, will that work? That won't work. Or the father tells the child, that's not going to work, is it? The child will think. So that's not the thing. But shaujam means as much as possible to maintain this principle. That's all. So already, according to the prarabdha karmam, we have vasanas inside, and there is a movement of that chalanam due to the vasanas of the prarabdha karmam. It is already there, and we ourselves have to control them, isn't it? Prarabdha vasana is inside us, and we have to control that. Suppose if you keep touching others, you make that control more difficult, because through touching others, embracing them, or through associating with them on a bodily level, their vasanas and other emotions will get into your subtle body, and you will have more difficulty in, it will have its effect. If you observe your own subtle body properly, you will notice it, how it happens to you. You can see yourself, try that out. When you had bodily contact with someone, how that influence of that subtle body has affected your own subtle body, you can notice it yourself in your own life. You can see that. But you should have that subtlety in you to notice that. Then you will know it. That what a change it is bringing inside. Change that is bringing inside. Other thing is that snanam manomala tyagaha yakshavitam. You will see the yakshaprasnam in the Mahabharatam. Yudhishthira Maharaj asked, this question was asked by Yaksha to Yudhishthira, what is bathing means? So the answer was given that snanam manomala tyagam. Manomala tyagam means purifying the mind is bathing actually, not the gross body. Purifying the bathing. So actually snanam or bathing means purifying the mind. This gross body, how much, in what extent you purify this body, it is still impure, is it not? This body, no matter how much you wash it or clean it or dry it, whatever you do with this body, it is still impure, isn't it? Therefore, the body, you can only do to that extent, the purification. But internal purification is more important, and that comes through happiness. Arjavam, what Krishna spoke about before, arjavam, santosham, all these things are keeping the body, mind always pure. That's more important than the keeping the body pure. That means not allowing unnecessary chittavritti to come in the mind and to pollute the mind. So to keep, protect the mind from the external thoughts, thought waves coming and disturbing the thought waves, making it impure. And that is shaucham. That is shaucham. Everything what Krishna has spoken is all based on that subtle understanding, not based on the gross level. Not based on the gross level. So that is what Krishna says, shaucham. Then the next one is sthairyam. Isn't it? Sthairyam. Amanitvam, adambitvam, ahimsa, kshanti, arjavam, acharyopasanam, shaujam, Krishna says. Isn't it? Acharyopasanam, shaujam. So, Shaujam means, then Shaujam is cleanliness, and Sairyam, the word is steadfastness. Prabhupada is used here, steadfastness, isn't it? Steadfastness. So steadiness means that one should be very determined to make progress in spiritual life. That's steadiness. Prabhupada says, without such determination, one cannot make tangible progress. And self-control means that one should not accept anything which is detrimental to the path of spiritual progress. One should become accustomed to this and reject anything which is against the path of spiritual life. So, steadfastness, sadhana. So, what is steadfastness? Steadfastness means, so, execute doing sadhana, for example. Sadhana is a part of spiritual life, is it not? Somebody is doing sadhana. How is that sadhana going on? Sometimes they'll get initiated and they'll chant for sometimes few weeks, sometimes a few months, sometimes a few years, and then stops. Then stops. And then they'll say, oh, it's not working. It's not working. And they'll give up. That's not sthairyam. That is what it is talking about. Sthairya means what you have taken upon yourself as a responsibility, doing it every day as per a commitment. What you have that is steadiness. That is steadiness. So, different people have different commitments, what they have done. But not to deviate from that, holding on to that. Adhyatma sadhana always is sthairyam. You will see mentioned like this. You should not do at that time, you find your own some other process. Nirghakala nairandarya sadkaram asevido dradabhumihi. Patanjali says this in the Yoga Sutra. It's the same thing in Yanamargam and the Yoga Margam, all these things are very much similar. He says, Nirghakalam. Nirghakalam means for a very long period of time. Nairandarya sadkaram. Nairandarya means continuously, without any interruptions. Always very fixed in that. Salkaram asevido dridabhumihi. That service in that way executed, you become firmly rooted in that dridabhumihi. Only then it will have its benefit. It will have its benefit. You should not test it out for a few days and then say, oh, it's not working. Dirghakalam. Dirghakalam means for a long period of time. Nairandaryam, uninterrupted, without any interruptions. If you do the chanting, it will have its benefit. Any sadhana for that matter, it's the same thing. So, and once you have accepted that, then you should forget about the result of that sadhana. Always you should not keep verifying, am I getting the results of my chanting? If you start doing like that, it will, one day you will give it up. Most of the people do like that, isn't it? After some time they'll say it's not working, because they are waiting for the results to come. Results hasn't come. And then they say, why do this? So they will give it up. So that should not be done. You should not look into the results and do the sadhana. Sadhana should be done because it's a commitment. You have to do that. Then. So, so sadhana, when it is executed, results are not to be looked into. Even forget about the liberation. Even that you are not thinking about that. It is something you have taken on board till death, or till the body is not allowing you to do it. That situation can happen. Then all the sadhana has got that problem. One day body will create trouble. Body will say you cannot do it anymore. If that situation happens, you are allowed to give up sadhana. Or death comes, you can give up sadhana. Otherwise not. Otherwise not. So, so under no circumstances to give up the sadhana. Under no circumstances to give up sadhana. So if it is practiced properly, when at the right time and on a regular basis, when that time comes, just like the body and the mind is asking for the food, in a similar way it will be asking for the sadhana at the right time. If you have practiced it properly in life, that at the right time, the body and the mind will be asking for the sadhana exactly like the way it is asking for the food. It's asking for the food and the sleep and sleep. So, in order to do that, that means in your daily life, in your daily life a steadiness in everything. And that discipline, what you cultivate in your own life, that is what Krishna is calling it as sthairyam. The word sthairyam here is addressing that. So, under no circumstances, not to move away from that, in that fixed state, to remain in that. And you should not think sometimes that, oh, there are other processes, let me try that out. Sometimes you can see people, they come to chant Hare Krishna, and after some time they say, there is some better process, this doesn't suit me, I'll try something else. And go after some other process, and they'll try that out, and they leave that also, and they'll try something else. So moving away like this from one process to another process to another process, that's not a good thing. That is not steadiness. So mainly, sthairyam, what Krishna says is in relationship with sadhana, one's own execution of sadhana. Then after that, Krishna says is alma vinigraham. Sthairyam, alma vinigraham. Alma vinigraham. Alma vinigraham. Alma means mind here. Alma means mind. Somehow or the other, bringing the mind little by little and keeping this mind under control for executing the upasana, executing spiritual life, to bring the mind under control for that is this alma vinigraham. Alma vinigraham means that. And that's all that is spoken in this verse. We look at this way, sthairyam, sthira bhavam, bhavo moksha marge eva krita adhyavasayitam. Acharya Swamiji's commentary is very short on all these things. Reason is, these things are normally in them days necessity to explain them. This was understood without any. Today we have to explain everything in detail, otherwise people won't understand that. But in them days it wasn't necessary. That's why he put it in a very short sentences. Shaujam kayam malanam mrijalabhyam prakshalanam andaha cha manasaha pradipaksha bhavanaya ragadi malanam apanayanam shaujam. That is all he said. He says there, shaujam, the bodily impurities, you clean them with earth and the water, and ragadvesham inside, which are the impurities inside, you have to remove them by viparita bhavana. Viparita bhavana means knowing very well what ragadvesham will do for us and able to wipe them out from inside. That is viparita bhavana. And that is what Prabhupada mentions here as just chant the holy name, Hare Krishna, and purify yourself, he says here. And for internal cleanliness, one has to think of Krishna always and chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. This process cleans the accumulated dust of karma, past karma from the mind. Basically it refers to the vasanas inside. Vasanas inside. So, sthairyam, sthira bhavo moksha marge eva kridat adhyavasayitvam. In other words, in moksha margam, that means the process of self-realization, intensely pursuing that process, that is called this sthairyam. Alma vinigraha means Almanaha apakaragasya alma shabda vachyasya karya karana sanghadasya vinigraha sobhavena sarvada pravrtasya sanmarge eva nirodha alma vinigraha. Alma vinigraha means body, the mind, intelligence, senses, all of them, Krishna said earlier, is together the package, isn't it? We call it as kshetram. The kshetram, it is a sanghadam. He uses the word sanghadam, isn't it? The words earlier, remember? That sanghadam is the soul. Soul manifests like this for us at the moment in the form of body, mind, intelligence, ego, senses, everything together. Soul is acknowledged by us. Soul, we are perceiving the soul in this way, isn't it? And not doing anything which will damage any of these things, and to live in this world in that way, that is Alma Vinigraham. Alma Vinigraham means that. It's a difficult thing to, it's difficult also to follow 100% because there will be always interactions with the world which will destroy the body, which will destroy the mind, intelligence, senses, everything. But because Krishna says here, if you remember, if you look into the sixth verse, Icha dvesha sukham dukham sanghadas chetana dhrati edal kshetram samasena savigaram udakhridam. In that verse he said, it's a sanghatam. That sanghatam is what he is saying here, Atma Vinigraham. Because sanghatam means a combination of all these things together. Which one? Body, mind, intelligence, ego, senses, everything together. And the soul present inside, due to the presence of the soul, we perceive the soul now in this sankhatam, isn't it? In this combination of body, mind, intelligence, ego, senses. So not doing anything, whatever that may damage any of these things, any of them, either the body or the mind or the intelligence or the senses. Not to do anything which will destroy any of these things, and to live in that way, in a proper way, that means what? It means not to engage in excessive sense gratification. Sense gratification damages the body and the mind also. And engagements in such karma that makes the mind destructive or damages the mind or the intelligence or develops the false ego inside. So looking after everything on its own and making sure that none of them gets upset with the vyavaharam in the world or on our other activities. That is Atma Vinigraham mentioned here. Atma Vinigraham mentioned here. Indriyartesh, no. Amanitvam, Adambitvam, Ahimsa, Chandi, Arjavam, Acharyopasanam, Shaucham, Stairyam, Atma Vinigraham. So, this divinity inside us, what Krishna has spoken, that means presence of Krishna inside, that divinity inside, recognizing that first, that Krishna is present in everybody's heart, and in a natural way, shifting our attention from the world towards that soul, and experiencing that presence of Krishna inside as Antaryami, that is spiritual life. That is spiritual life. And that's the same thing, in other words, if you call as bhakti. Bhakti is the same thing, isn't it? Bhakti, it is very difficult to define what is bhakti. The way bhakti is defined by different authorities is different. Remember when we studied Narada Bhakti Sutram, we've spoken about that. Narada Maharshi defined bhakti in one way. Vedavyasa Maharshi defines in another way. Parashara Maharshi defines bhakti in another way. Shandilya Maharshi defines bhakti in a different way. So generally it is very difficult to define bhakti. But Narada Maharshi mentioned in the Bhakti Sutram, Sattu anirvachaniya prema swarupaha. That is the one of the Bhakti Sutram of Narada Maharshi. Anirvachaniya prema swarupam. In other words, it cannot be defined. It cannot be defined. Priyam is our swarupam, isn't it? From soul comes that love for other living entities, love for Krishna, love for parents, love for society. So many ways that priyam is coming from the self. Tyagaraja Swamiji mentions about this, that he is asking Ramachandra this question. He says, everybody asking me what is bhakti? He says, I do not know what bhakti is. He says, Teliyaledu Rama Bhakti Margam. He says, I don't know, Ramachandra, what this bhakti means. Because it's such a difficult thing to define, isn't it? Remember I mentioned this before also, that bhakti we will define in different ways. And Prahlada talked about bhakti in one way. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasim, Sakyam, Atma Nivedanam, like that. And then there is other definition of bhakti rasam, like what we talk about as the Shandam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Vatsalyam, Madhuryam, all the bhakti rasam is there. Keeping all these things, to define what is bhakti, it's a very difficult thing, is it not? How will you define bhakti? Defining bhakti is a very difficult process. Jnana margam is different. Bhakti margam, that is purely to define bhakti, is difficult. In Narada Maharshi gave a simple definition that sa tu anirvachaniya prema swarupam, that undefinable, he says, even while defining it, he says. While defining it, he says it's the most undefinable thing, but simply developing that love for swarupam. For Swarupam, he says, means Antaryami, Krishna inside,
That is bhakti. That is Narada Maharshi's definition. Srimad Bhagavatam says, mukti tekta anyadharyubam swarubena vyavasthiti. There, anyadharyubam tektva swarubena vyavasthiti. That is bhakti. Swaswarubanu anusandhanam bhaktiriti abhidhiyate. Another definition. If you are searching after your swarubam, that is bhakti. Don't take all the other sadhana bhakti what we talk about. We are talking about bhakti on a higher level, proper bhakti. And Krishna calls it as parabhakti, isn't it? In the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says, mad bhaktim labhade param, he says. So that is parabhakti in the Bhagavad Gita. Parabhakti is discussed in the Srimad Bhagavatam also. So bhakti is a difficult thing. And what is the goal of bhakti? Ultimate goal of bhakti is to surrender to Krishna. Sharanagati, isn't it? So, and that is the final definition, Bhagavad Gita also. Sarva dharman parityajya mamekam sharanam braja aham tvam sarva bhavebhyo mokshayishyami maashucha. So there also, Krishna says here, that is the last word in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna mentions that. So when will that sharanagati or surrender will happen? When will the surrender will happen? When will that happen? The answer to that is, when your false ego has tried very hard to do it and tried its best in the life by engaging in sadhana and in various other processes, and he done his best, and with all its efforts he has tried, and still he could not do it. He could not get to realize the truth. At that time, at that time, from Krishna's side, the mercy comes. That is when Sharanagati comes. Otherwise, it won't happen. We will always say, you have to surrender to Krishna, you have to surrender. That is not so simple, a surrender like that. What Krishna is saying is, surrender has to happen. First, you have to go through this sadhana process, chanting the holy name and all the other requirements, studying Srimad Bhagavatam, Salsangam, deity worship, everything what is prescribed in the Shastram. One has to do that. And at the same time, he is trying to take the instructions what the great devotees have given in the Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita and trying to follow that. But when all this is going on, the false ego inside will not easily surrender. Will not easily surrender. On a theoretical level, you can say, I am trying to surrender. It's only trying to surrender, but you will never surrender. But you have tried your best. As much as possible, you have tried. After doing all that, finally you will give up. You will give up finally. You cannot do it anymore. Because you have seen that it is beyond your capacity. So when it comes to that stage, it is at that time Sharanagati happens. Surrender happens. Surrender is not something what you do. It's not something what you do, but something which happens. That's the way surrender is. By then, normally in life, after getting a lot of trouble in life from various sides, body giving trouble and other problems in life, and so many problems in life, all what it does is, little by little, it's wiping away that false ego inside. Our ahankara kshayam, they call it. That ahankaram gets into, destroyed. But completely it's very difficult to throw it away. It will always be there. Or when the situation changes, it will come back again. This is the nature of this ego, isn't it? Ahankaram's nature is like that. So what Krishna is saying is that when you execute your sadhana for realizing the self, when you have that intense motivation to do, practice, engage in spiritual life, you will continue doing sadhana for a very long period of time without giving up. Based on your ego, you are doing the sadhana. Sadhana is coming from the ego, you have to remember. It's not coming from the self. So that ego, after a while, will start coming to this realization that I cannot do it anymore. I can't, it's beyond my capacity. Only at that time, that surrender will happen at that time. And that is proper surrender. As I said, surrender is not something you do, but something it will happen. Something that happens. So bhakti process, for example, we are executing the bhakti process, and whatever
one's process is, he is staying in that process and he is doing the sadhana accordingly. For example, those who are doing the Bhakti Margam process, they follow one system of chanting the holy name, studying Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, and paying obeisances to Krishna, visiting the temple, offering food to Krishna, and in that way develop a lifestyle of surrender to Krishna. That is the bhakti process. In Jnana Margam, they give up all attachment to the world to a large degree and cultivate the knowledge of the self through the help of the Shastram. That is the Jnana Margam. Yoga Margam is little different. Yoga Margam is more of, we will refer to as Karma Yogam, for example, that completely offering all the results to Krishna of one's life in this world and not getting attached to the results, and in that way trying to take away Kartrutva Bhoktrutvam from inside, or quietly wiping out Kartrutvam Bhoktrutvam Ragadvesham from inside and giving up all the energy what he has in the form of body, mind, intelligence, everything in serving Krishna. So all the different yoga processes, Karma Yogam, Jnana Yogam, Bhakti Yogam, they function in three different ways. It operates in this world. But Bhakti Sadhana, and that, but they have to do the sadhana, all of them, according to the process what they are following. But whatever sadhana you do, whether it is Jnana Margam or Karma Margam, still, along with that, you require bhakti. You require bhakti. Without bhakti, it cannot be. You cannot speak about bhakti as a separate process. It's difficult. You can see, even Prabhupada mentions, when you read through Bhagavad Gita, you will see there that Prabhupada ties down karma margam to bhakti, jnana margam to bhakti. Why? Karmam jnanam also requires bhakti. Without bhakti support, even karma yogam cannot work, jnana margam also cannot work without the support of bhakti. And because bhakti is required in both karma margam and jnana margam, that is the reason why bhakti is not spoken as a specific process in the Bhagavad Gita. Have you noticed that? If you look into Bhagavad Gita's verse, then he mentions there, isn't it? Logesmin dvidanishta pura prokta mayanaka jnana yogena sankhyanam karma yogena yoginam. I think it is in the third or fourth chapter, I think. Krishna says there, isn't it? Logesmin, when Krishna starts speaking Bhagavad Gita, he says to Arjuna, Lokesmin Duvida Nishta. 3-3. Lokesmin Duvida Nishta. There's only two processes, Krishna says. What are they? Duvida Nishta Pura Prokta Mayanaka. That comes from time immemorial. Way before Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita, even in this world, I'm saying. That way before that, Upanishad's time, also, these two processes only existed. Pura, which are the Jnana Yogena Sankhyanam, Karma Yogena Yoginam. Now, people ask the question, why bhakti was not spoken there? There is no need to speak about bhakti. Why? If you want to succeed in Jnana Yogam, bhakti is necessary. If you want to succeed in Karma Yogam, bhakti is necessary. Bhakti is not a separate process itself. It is the one that supports Jnanam and that supports Karma. Karma Yogam as well. That is why it is so important. So if you, and those who have not developed that bhakti in the heart and simply gone in the other directions, they are the ones who have created problem. That is where the difficulty started. If you remember Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he met Prakashananda Saraswati, Prakashananda Saraswati was a very learned scholar, but moved away from the bhakti path. That was the mistake. And that is where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu completely disagreed with him. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had all the respect for Prakashananda Saraswati, you have to remember that. He was the head of the Advaita philosophers there, who was present there. And as I mentioned before, this has happened so many times in the history, that every time acharyas have to come and correct the situation. That when in the name of Jnana Margam, if you move away from bhakti, you will be in trouble. In the name of Karma Yogam, if you move away from bhakti, you'll be in trouble. Bhakti is the supporting pillar for all yoga processes. Jnana Margam, Yoga Margam, Bhakti Margam, Karma Margam, doesn't matter. Any yoga process, if it has to become successful, it has to be supported with bhakti. So bhakti's position is like that. That is why Acharya Swamiji himself,
who wrote all the Vedantic texts on Advaita Vedantam, what did he do? Simultaneously, he wrote all the stotrams for glorifying all the deities. Never he once said that without himself, his own Bhajagovindam prayers, if you look, you will see Bhajagovindam, Bhajagovindam, Govindam Bhajam Odamate, Samprapte Sannihide Kale Nahi Nahi Rakshadi Dukranyakarane, he says. What's the use of studying all these books, he says, if you are not developed bhakti inside? That's a simple question. So even the greatest thoughtful philosophers, great jnanis, yogis, or devotees, everybody recognizes that without bhakti, no other process can work. It cannot work. It will simply develop into word jugglery. It will be simply remains on the surface. It does not hit with the place where it's meant to happen. So the reason is that if there is no bhakti, even the jnanamargam, the jnanam process will not become a jnanam process, jnanamargam. And karma margam will not become karma margam. So behind that, bhakti should be there. Bhakti means what? Respect and priyam. That what? Bhakti does not mean only addressed to it. Bhakti means that this whole spiritual life is centered around bhakti. Centered around bhakti. Only thing, you have to understand what bhakti means. That's where all the problem comes. We are misunderstanding bhakti means going to the temple and seeing the deities and deity worship as the bhakti. That is one aspect of the bhakti. Proper bhakti, if you want to understand, you have to study Bhagavad Gita. Adveshta sarva bhodanam maitra karuna evacha nirmamo nirahankara samadukha sugakshami sandushta sadadam yogi yadalma drida nishaya mai arpidamano buddhir yomal bhakta samaye priyaha yasmano dujade logo logano dujade chaya harsham arshabayo dvagir muktoya sajame priya yone krishidina dveshti. Krishna goes on saying like this, isn't it? It's about 12 verses, I think, from verse 12 to 20 in the 12th chapter. If you read those verses, you will see what bhakti means. That is what Krishna is referring to here. That bhakti, that is the proper bhakti. So that bhakti, when we say bhakti, normally people will develop very different understanding, isn't it? Different understanding. So we are thinking that going to the temple, paying your obeisances there, all this, that's all bhakti. We are not, that's not excluded. And chanting the holy name, everything is bhakti. But that is all sadhana bhakti. That's all sadhana bhakti. But beyond that, there is a final goal of bhakti, which is referred to as para bhakti, which Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita, isn't it? If you see in the last chapter, in the 18th chapter, I think Krishna mentions there. Nashojani nakamshadi samasarveshu bhudeshu madbhaktim lebhade param. That is as Krishna says about that. Bhaktya sanchadeya bhaktya. You will see in the Bhagavadam the same thing mentioned. Bhaktya sanchadeyam bhaktya. From one bhakti, another bhakti comes. Have you noticed that in the Bhagavadam? Krishna mentions there that how this happens. Bhaktya sanjadeya bhaktya. That is the best way the Navayogis have spoken in the Bhagavadam. Bhaktya sanjadeya bhaktya. If you look into the third chapter, Navayogi Nimisamvadam, in the third chapter, verse 31. Smaranda smarayandascha mithau gaugaharam harim bhaktya sanjadaya bhaktya vibratyut plagam tanyam. He says there, who is saying this is Prabuddha.
Prabuddha Maharshi is saying there to King Nimi, Bhaktya Sanjadaya Bhaktya Vibratyut Pulagam Tanyum. He talks about that. That means from one bhakti, from sadhana bhakti, eventually parabhakti comes. Parabhakti develops. From one bhakti, so when you start the bhakti, it is a sadhana bhakti. It is sadhana bhakti. So sadhana bhakti and this parabhakti, what is the difference? Difference is, in sadhana bhakti, Krishna is there, I am there. Isn't it? Krishna is there, I am there. And always that separation is there between Krishna and me. Experience has not happened. Krishna's experience hasn't happened to the person yet. And therefore, the faith is also always wobbly. Always wobbly. So sometimes it can get shaken. All this is symptoms of sadhana bhakti. Sadhana bhakti's problem that is wobbly. Never steady. Sometimes strong faith, sometimes not. So that is a sadhana bhakti. Parabhakti state, in all these things you can see, chanting the holy name, deity worship, and all other kinds of processes, you are considering Krishna as a person only, and thinking about yourself also as a person only, you are engaged in the executing the bhakti. That is that sadhana bhakti. In the sadhana bhakti stage, it is like that. You are considering Krishna only simply as a deity in the temple or a form like that, Krishna's form as a person, and executing that bhakti. And about yourself also, you are thinking, I am separate, I am an individual, I am a devotee or whatever identity you have taken. And in that way, you are relating with Krishna. That is sadhana bhakti. That is sadhana bhakti. So, in this sadhana bhakti, goal will be always that the realization of Krishna as kshetrajna will come. Kshetram kshetrajna, that relationship is there in the sadhana bhakti. In the sadhana bhakti. So, body will be known as the kshetram. And kshetram, inside the kshetram, Krishna is present there as kshetrajnam, that will come. But it is not complete. That realization is not complete. So, when you are seeing Krishna only inside this kshetram, what will happen is, that is in your internal realization. You are seeing inside the kshetram Krishna's presence. But when you open your eyes and look at the world, you are seeing everything different. You are seeing everything different. But once you have opened your eyes, and what you have seen inside, outside also in the same way, then that becomes parabhakti. See that difference? Inside you have seen Krishna. That is in the kshetram, kshetrajna level. Through sadhana you will get there. But that thing, what has happened inside, Krishna's presence inside is kshetrajnam. That realization, when you opened your eyes and looked at the world, and you saw the same thing outside, what you saw inside, that is parabhakti. That is then parabhakti. That is why in the Bhagavatam you will see that if you look into the second chapter of the same thing, of the Ekadasya Skandam, Canto 11, he says, Hari Ruvacha, Sarva Bhudeshu Yapashed, Bhagavad Bhavama Alpana, Bhudani Bhagavatyalpa, Esha Bhagavadotama. Definition of a person in the Parabhakti stage. That's what is defined there. They did not talk about Sarva Bhudeshu, both are covered there, you can see, inside as well as outside. Whereas, initially, in the Sadhana Bhakti stage, you won't reach that. Sadhana Bhakti won't get you there. Sadhana Bhakti will only get you to the stage of kshetram, kshetrajna and understanding. That's how your Sadhana Bhakti process going on. Ahangaram is there. Ahangaram is executing the sadhana. Krishna is a kshetrajna who is inside. So kshetram, kshetrajna relationship remains in the Sadhana Bhakti. But as soon as you come to the Parabhakti stage, Sarva Bhudeshu Yapashyen Bhagavad Bhavam Alpana Bhudani Bhagavati Alma, Esha Bhagavadottamam, Ishwareta Dadini. If we look into those verses, they are very important verses to understand the bhakti properly. And if you go further down, first, second, that means verse 45 is about the pure devotee who has got parabhakti in him. Verse 46 is the second class devotee, Madhyama Adhikari as we call it, who sees, that is discussed there. And verse 47 is the very neophyte who only sees Krishna's presence in the temple, nothing else. So 45, 46 and 47, the three categories of devotees. Then from 48 onwards, again Krishna talks about parabhakti, if you can notice that. Grihitvab indriyair arthan yonadveshti na khrishyati vishnor mayamidam pashyan savai bhagavadottamaha. In other words, grihitvab indriyair arthan yonadveshti na khrishyati. His consciousness is such, never disturbed about anything. Na khrishyati na dveshti. Same thing Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita also. If you look in the 12th chapter, Yona Krishyati na dveshti. If you look, the same words he has used there. That is one of the symptoms of parabhakti. That means, no dvesh, he doesn't get happy by someone praising him, or he doesn't get upset if somebody insults him. Both. Grihitva bindriyair arthan yona dveshti na krishyati. Why is the reason? Because he knows senses are acting and I'm not under control of the senses. He is so independent of the senses. And also he knows Vishnor Mayamidam Pashyan. Everything is Krishna's Maya. Vishnor Mayamidam Pashyan Savai Bhagavadottama. He is the first class devotee. He knows that this whole creation is nothing but Krishna's Maya. Vishnor Mayamidam Pashyan Savai Bhagavadottama, he says. Then Dehendriya Pranamanodhyam Yo Janmapayakshut Bhayatarshakrachraihi Samsara Dharmai Avimukhyamanam Smrityahareer Bhagavada Pradhanaha. This is another. This is all about that Parabhakti stage of a devotee in the Parabhakti stage. Dehendriya Pranamanodhyam Yo Janmapayakshut Bhayatarshakrachraihi. Mind, body, senses, pranan, and all of these things does not get agitated due to its demands. Janmapayakshut bhayatarshakrachraihi. Because, you know, by that stage, Krishna is expecting that in the parabhakti stage, demands of the body, like, you know, the shadurmi, they call it. In the Bhagavatam, they use the word shadurmi. Shadurmi means the six different kinds of waves that is attacking us. What are they? Hunger and thirst, hankering and lamentation, old age and death. These things, those six things, they are always attacking us, isn't it? Those impact of that is not felt by this devotee who is in the parabhakti stage. He won't be impacted by that. Hunger and thirst, hankering and lamentation, and old age and death. These things will not have any impact on him. That's that stage. Dehendriya pranamanodhiyam yo janmapayakshut bhayatarshakrachraihi. They are all called samsara dharma. Samsara dharma this is, isn't it? Birth, death, old age, disease, all that is samsara dharma. Samsara dharmai avimuhyamana smritya harer bhagavada pradhanaha. That he is so fixed in Krishna consciousness that none of these things can have any impact. That is a pure devotee. That is a pure devotee is not a title given by any authority. It's not based on that. No, nobody can make anybody a pure devotee. He has to become a pure devotee. That's the only way you become a pure devotee. And these are the symptoms of a pure devotee. Why does Krishna say to us this? So that you don't go and catch hold of someone and make him a pure devotee. And take him as a pure devotee. Na kama karma bijanam yasya chedasi sambhavaha vasudevaika nilaya savai bhagavadottama. Na kama karma bijanam. That means he has completely got rid of kamya karma. There is no more desires to engage in fruitive activity. Completely gone away from a person. Yasya chedasi sambhavaha. And what else? Vasudevaika nilaya savai bhagavadottamaha. Completely he is managed, controlled by Krishna. Krishna is running him, running his body, his mind, everything.
na yasya janma karma abhyam na varnashrama jati bhi sajjade smin aham bhavo dehe vai sahare priyaha na yasya janma karma abhyam janmam karmam birth and his activities cannot be understood by others because it is above the varnashrama dharmam. It is about na varnashrama jati bhi. Varnam ashramam has no more control over him. He is beyond varnashrama dharmam. Generally they are called as atyashrami. There were personalities like that. Sadashiva Brahmendra. Then there was this person who wrote a famous commentary on Mugundamala, Raghavananda Muni. They were all called atyashrami. Atyashrami means they have gone beyond varnashramam. Varnam and ashramam rules don't apply to them anymore. They are not Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, Brahmachari, Grahastham, Vanaprastham, Sannyasam. All this does not apply to them. They have gone transcended all that. They are called, what they mentioned here is that Navarnashrama Jadibi. Varnamashramam is based for the proper functioning of the society here. But those who have transcended all these things, they are called Atyashrami. And their dealings with Krishna is in a different level. We won't understand that. They will dictate to Krishna many things and Krishna will offer them what they want. That's a totally different relationship. Varnashrama jadibi sajjadesmin aham bhavam dehevai sahare priyaham. And they are personalities where that aham bhavam has gone completely from inside. That ahankaram is not there anymore. Even a trace of false ego inside. They have, and bodily existence is not anymore a consideration for them. Na yasya svaraha idi vityushvatmaniva abhidaha sarvabhuta samashanda savai bhagavadottama. All these verses you can see is talking about who is a devotee, who is having that parabhakti, pure bhakti. In other words, what? Na yasya svaha paraha. For him, he doesn't consider this is mine and that's yours. That thought has gone away from him. He considers all the wealth belongs to Krishna. Everything is Krishna's. That's the platform he is at. And he will take wealth from anywhere he wants and he will use it for Krishna's service. He doesn't think at all that something belongs to somebody or something belongs to someone else. And not something belongs to him or something belongs to somebody else. That is that state. Na yasya svaha paraha idi vitteshu almani va bhidaha sarvabhuta samashanda savai bhagavadottamaha. That all the wealth belongs to Krishna and everyone has a right to live in this world. Sarvabhuda, and therefore he is equally disposed to all everybody else. Savai Bhagavadottama. Then there is three more verses. Tribhuvana vibhava hedavepya kuntham smridhira ajita alma suradimir vimurgyan na chaladi bhagaval padaravindam lava nimishardham abhiyasa vaishnavagriya Bhagavada Urivikramangri Shakha Nakamani Chandrigaya Nirasta Tabe Kritikada Upasidadam Punasa Prabhavadi Chandra Ivodi Darkadabam Visrajadikadayamna Yasya Sakshal Hari Ravashavi Hidopi Akaukanasham Pranay Rashanaya Dhrudhangi Bhatmam Sabhavadi Bhagavada Pradhana Muktaha. So those three verses also talking about a pure devotee's position. So that is this, what Krishna is saying here in these verses also. So when sadhana bhakti will take you to this stage of kshetram kshetrajnyan, but when it develops in what at that stage, Krishna's realization inside has happened, but when you open the eyes and looked at the world, it still remains as the world. When parabhakti comes, that stage changes. What you have seen inside, that's what you see outside. What do you see inside? The same thing what you see outside. So here, Savai Bhagavadottama. So, in many ways, Krishna has spoken how to bring that false ego under control, isn't it? Acharya Upasanam, Amanitvam, Adambitvam, all these things. And Chandi Arjavam, Acharya Upasanam, Stairyam, Atma Vinigraham. So all these things we have spoken before. So normally for a devotee, if he is making progress, these qualities will in a natural way come to him. And but this ego also will manifest in him sometimes. Even though his devotional life, he is executing spiritual life, it is possible that sometimes his ego will come inside that. And it is possible that in that bhakti process while he is executing, if a little ahankaram or false ego comes, then sadhana becomes a little bit different then. Sadhana, what you are executing, will be a little different. Normally, what do you say that in ahankaram comes, that our sadhana's pattern also will change, isn't it? Just like you are fixed on the, in order to execute properly sadhana, you need a frame of mind, proper frame of mind. Otherwise, it's simply mechanical. It's done in a mechanical way. Forcefully, you have forced the mind to sit and chant the holy name and finish with it and run away from there. Oh, it's over for today. At least tomorrow only I have to think about. That is even in the sadhana level, it is in a very crude form of bhakti. But if sadhana is improving at some stage, you will know very well that you are managing, keeping all this understanding what Krishna has spoken about sadhana, and you are executing sadhana. In the middle of all that, something happened in life. Something got upset. Some unbalance happened. Either you got sick or you got some problem happened in life and everything went against you. Or you got very disturbed inside. What will you say at that time? You will say, I've done so much sadhana and this is what I get from this. This will come at that time, isn't it? So when that happens, it is possible that it can be utilized in the proper way, that even while executing sadhana, as a way of surrendering to Krishna. That is one option. The other option is, it can also detract you from the, take away from the process of sadhana. In both ways, it can happen. These are all the pitfalls in the sadhana. That's what you're talking about. Pitfalls in the sadhana. But if when a disturbance comes like that, if someone is able to accept that it is Krishna who has decided that this should happen to me in that way, and just like a child who will accept the decision of the parents without any protest, if in that way, if you have to accept it easily, then if you do that, these qualities what Krishna has spoken will come to him without effort. They are all connected to each other. They are not independent. We are thinking of putting columns and rows and separating them out. No, it doesn't work like that. All our sadhana is connected with all these jnana sadhana, our spiritual sadhana, for example, chanting the holy name and other sadhana, is connected with this amanitvam, adambitvam, ahimsa, shanti, arjam. These qualities will develop in a person if he, whenever he gets a little disturbance in his life while executing sadhana, if he is able to surrender to Krishna and accept that it is Krishna's mercy that has come to me in the form of this distress, and if he continues with the sadhana in that way, very quickly these qualities what Krishna has spoken will come to him. That is why it is mentioned like that. You will see here, however, the way you approach Krishna, depending on that, these qualifications will develop. That is why Krishna says, Ye yadhamam prabhadyande tamstathaivam. That is what that verse actually means. Ye yadhamam prabhadyande tamstathaivam vajamyaham. Then, mama varpanu vartande manushya partha sarvacha. That's the verse, isn't it? Ye yadhamam prabhadyande. There is a verse there. I think it is in the 9th chapter. Ye yadhamam prabhadyande tamstathaivam vajamyaham. Krishna says, which number is that? Four 11. Four 11, yeah. Yeah.
യഥാമാം പ്രപദ്യന്തി താംസ്തഥൈവ ഭജാമ്യഹം. മമ വർത്താനു വർത്തന്തി മനുഷ്യ പാർത്ഥ സർവശ. കൃഷ്ണ ഈസ് സെയിങ് ദർ ഇസ് എൻ ഇറ്റ്. സോ ദിസ് ഈസ് ഹൗ ഇറ്റ് ഈസ് ദാറ്റ് ഓൾ ദി സാധന ഓൾസോ വൈൽ എക്സിക്യൂട്ടിംഗ് സാധന സറണ്ടർ ഹാസ് ടു ഗോ എലോങ് വിത്ത് ദാറ്റ്. സാധന ഷുഡ് നോട്ട് സിംപ്ലി ബിക്കം എ കർമ്മം. കർമ്മം ഈസ് സംതിങ് വാട്ട് യു ഡു ആൻഡ് യു ലീവ് ഇറ്റ്, ഇസ്ന്റ് ഇറ്റ്. സാധന ഈസ് നോട്ട് ലൈക്ക് ദാറ്റ്. വൈൽ എക്സിക്യൂട്ടിംഗ് സാധന ദിസ് പ്രിൻസിപ്പിൾ യേ യഥാമാം പ്രപദ്യന്തെ താംസ്തദൈവ ഭജാമ്യഹം. അക്കോർഡിംഗ് ടു ദ സറണ്ടർ ദ റിസൾട്ട്സ് ഓൾസോ വിൽ കം. ഇൻ ദാറ്റ് വേ വാട്ട് കൃഷ്ണ ഈസ് സെയിങ് ദെയർ ഈസ് ദാറ്റ് ഇഫ് യു ആർ എൻഗേജ്ഡ് ഇൻ സാധന ആൻഡ് യു ആർ കണ്ടിന്യൂസ്ലി സറണ്ടറിങ് ഈവൻ അഗെയിൻസ്റ്റ് ഓൾ അഡ്വേഴ്സിറ്റീസ് ഇൻ ലൈഫ്, ഇഫ് യു ആർ സ്റ്റിൽ സറണ്ടറിങ് ടു കൃഷ്ണ, അറ്റ് ദാറ്റ് ടൈം വാട്ട് വിൽ ഹാപ്പൻ ഈസ് ദീസ് ക്വാളിഫിക്കേഷൻസ് വാട്ട് വി ഹവ് ഡിസ്കസ്ഡ് സോ ഫാർ ഓൾ ഓഫ് ദം വിൽ കം ടു ദാറ്റ് പേഴ്സൺ വിത്തൗട്ട്. ദിസ് ഈസ് ദ ബ്യൂട്ടി ഓഫ് ഭക്തി പ്രോസസ്. This is the beauty of bhakti process. Individually, you don't have to cultivate those qualities. But with sadhana and surrender, it can happen. So that's what we want to talk about. So we'll stop today and we'll next weekend no classes. And the week after that, Saturday we won't have a class, but Sunday we'll have the class here. So that we'll stop today. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Ina diapa proki, ja, Srila Prabhupada ki.